Recorded live.
Hello, this is William Fink, and this is the Chris DeGenia Euro Fellowship call, and it's January 21st, 2010.
Yeah.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
How are we doing today?
That's a good thing. Quite fine.
Great.
I mean,
not
completely.
So what do we have to talk about today? Well, where is, we're missing a few faces. We should probably just banter until they get here or something. I don't know.
Yeah, where is our Sussex man?
I don't know.
He'll be still trying to get in.
I had difficulties getting in. It took me about 10 minutes.
Okay,
really?
I don't know why. TalkShoe is rough sometimes, I guess.
But it's strange. It was in a minute. And I'm normally spoken. I'm the bad hair. It takes me 10 minutes at least.
Yeah, Matthew got right in.
Yes, I'm sure did I. Judith, have you met Matthew?
We haven't been introduced.
Yeah, but who was this one? Who is you? This is Matthew.
Tia Teffy, this is Matthew. He's Bavarian on the forum. He's,
oh, Tia Teffy.
He's from where he says he's from. He's from Bavaria.
Ah.
I
think he has another name, Sussex Man.
The Sussex Man, that's Chris.
Yes.
But I was born in Sussex. So I'm Sussex Man number two, in actual fact, but I took Bavaria.
Yeah, I thought so.
At least you've heard of him, Judith. Haven't you?
Yes, I have.
I knew you would have done.
How come there isn't a North Saxon land?
A North Saxon land?
Yeah, right. Well, there's Essex and Wessex and Sussex, but there's no North.
Oh, yeah. No, that's correct.
I'm
just
making a sick joke.
There is. There's a North Fork.
Well,
North
but I'm making a joke that they don't call it North Sax. That's all.
Yeah.
I'm just being silly.
I was just keeping it simple.
Nobody wanted to live there. They named it Nobody Wanted to Live There, so they changed it to Northumbria or something.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Northumbria is a long way further north than these Essex and Sussex places.
Yeah.
Well, it's still one of the seven original
Anglo-Saxon
counties, you know, Mercia, Northumbria.
Yes,
it's
one of the original countries.
Yeah,
it's north of the Humber, hence its name.
That's exactly what it is, north of the Humber, Northumbria.
Yep.
I didn't put that there. I didn't know about a Humber River until I read Bede and saw the way he used it. That's how I got it.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
So what are we talking about? I mean, the recording's going, and we're just, I'm just making stupid jokes.
Yeah.
Well, we were waiting for other people to arrive, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I have the question. William, did you get the email about your location in Gilsheim?
I did get an email from you yesterday, right? And I actually put an image up on. I was going to send you a link to on my WilliamFink.net site today, and it's a marriage certificate for my great 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 grandfather's marriage certificate, and he married a Catherine Edelman from Finkenbach. She came over here from Germany, and he married her. And it it's his second wife, and it was he was 59 years old, so it's probably about 1866.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, within a year or two. Yeah, I have a lot of old records from my family on my father's side, not on my mother's. My mother's family is from New England Puritan stock. You know, early English stock in Massachusetts.
Did you mention that your family were also Irish?
Well, my father's German-Irish, and my mother's English-Scottish.
Oh, it's a good mix.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just a I'm a mutt, but it's a good thing I'm a northern mutt.
Yeah.
My mother has my grand. I have a set of grand great grandparents. Their last name was Grant. They were Scottish, and the rest of my mother's English. And my father is German Irish. The Finks are German, and my father's mother's name was Cronin, and she was Irish.
Oh,
I have pictures of you know, my grandmother's cousins, my Cronin grandmother's cousins from Ireland, that a cousin went over and saw the family graves over there. I got pictures. They'll eventually be on WilliamFink.net.
Ah, but maybe there are still family members alive here from Fink in Germany.
Well, I'm sure, but I mean, I don't know if I want to go over there to find out.
I can try it. I can try to find it in a dictionary in the telephone directory in the area, and I'll come or two. I'll call in, and maybe they have knowledge about it, or they don't want to know it at all. You never know.
Yeah, well, I my family genealogy is on. I mean, my Fink family came over here in 1836. But my I have a, you know, my great grandfather's first cousin in the 1890s made a trip back to Gallheim. I think it was 1895 or 1896. And he saw where, and his grandparents came from there. And he wrote, I have a diary all about it. I have his travel diary that a cousin supplied us.
Oh, good.
From his trip in the 1890s.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing. Oh, then he may have...
Yeah, it's nice to be a little bit in touch with your roots, or to, at least to know what tree you've got out of, right?
Yeah, sure. Might know
I wish
more.
I knew more about my mother's father's name was Ashworth.
Ashworth, yeah.
He was English. But I don't know. He died when my mother was very, very young in a car accident. I don't really know a whole lot else about it.
Yeah. Oh. Well, that happens today sometimes. that's what you have to search in England. But what I can search out here, why not? The internet is helpful.
my uncle was going to take United a trip States, to Gallheim, and the dollar tanked, and the euro shot up, and he could afford it when the euro was like 89 cents on a dollar, and now it's like 130 cents on a dollar, whatever. And he said,
"Yeah, that's correct." For it's now some 75%. That means I get for $1, I get 75 euro cents. Yeah, but it's extremely low. It's ridiculous.
Right,
and that's why Europe is expensive for the Americans.
Yeah, well, you know, the American dollar can't be worth anything when they give 10 million of them a year to some monkey to play a game, right?
Correct. It's a horror.
That's the way I look at it. If they can give one of them 10 million or something a year to play a game, then it can't be worth anything.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's today's times. And on the other hand, I have another question. I got from somebody in information he wanted to know about astronomy, but that was in a ministry. It was in a talk show, or on YouTube it was, and that is in El Shaddai Ministries in Portland. Have you ever heard about that?
You know, I think I've seen some of their stuff. I don't, you know, astronomy's not my thing, so I don't get involved in it, but I know that there is a... I believe that the original constellations before the Romans and the Greeks made some changes to them, that it's very obvious that they told basically the story of the gospel. I wouldn't
doubt
it.
Yeah. Now, but the most interesting thing is not the astronomy part of it, but where I was interested in is what do you remember or know or whatever about the El Shaddai Ministries?
I've heard the name, but I don't know anything about them. I can't, you know, I've probably seen writing from them, but I can't.
Okay.
Because I could picture the name on a piece of paper, you know, but I can't really recall what I read.
Correct. That's all right. just in asking for it because I have been looking at them. I saw that on the YouTube and the talkings about it, but I stopped it because I don't like it. Then I went to their homepage and I checked their book list. That's always the easiest thing to control, what kind of people I have in front of me. And then I saw all the books, and all the authors are all Jews. Then it was end of game to me.
Yeah, it should be.
I think when you see that El Shaddai, that is where it's coming from.
Okay. Yeah, and then I say, when I gave the other one information, I said, sorry, it is a too Jewish business, and I don't trust their information at all. And if they say, well, the sun and the moon, they were eclipsing at that and that time, and since then we have been doing the calculations, I have no control over these calculations. Not at all. I have to believe it, what
they
say.
That's what I could talk to you about.
I learned my lessons in that way.
That's what I could talk to you about, Matthew. I got a question for you.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, Josephus records an eclipse of the moon around Herod's death.
Yeah?
But I've read that there were actually two eclipses within a couple of years of the moon.
That can be.
I would love to see that proven or disproven. Can we actually calculate the eclipses of the moon back that far? Accurately?
Even further. We have a tremendous possibility for computing exactly what time, whenever, whatever eclipse has been or is going to come.
I would love to have a table of eclipses of the moon from like maybe 10 BC to to 1 AD or something, 2 AD.
Yeah. And NASA has it. NASA has a complete list. I think it was an internet. I heard about it, but it seems to be on internet possible to find out what the opportunities are. And I would suggest it just type in at NASA about this, and you can find it out there. I can do it as well,
trying to find that out,
but I won't do it right now.
Right, but I'll try that. I don't know what's out there with astronomy. I got a hard enough time keeping up what I do.
Understandable here. Anybody has his own job.
We're
tailor-made for something. Yahweh created his people. He wanted to have them doing the job. And the one is a shoemaker, and the other is minister, and the third one is astronomer, and the other one is housewoman. It's all correct. And we have to fulfill these duties. That's the point of view. And we don't mind. That's great work. It's just for June?
The Lord says he gives his gifts severally as he will. So we just have to accept what he gives us and proceed with his strength.
I just wish he'd give me two more hands so I could type more.
That's right. And I would like to have double amount of time. Then I can do even more.
Yeah, that too. For years I told guys in prison that I didn't have enough hours in a day, and they would look at me like I was crazy.
I remember that was Mr. Kuhlberg in the Netherlands, in the company where we would work, and he came in after lunchtime, and he was popping up his pipe, and he came up to me because I didn't go to the lunch. I had my lunch in the drawer, and I was working for myself in the office. And then he said, Steph, it must be an awful, terrible thing for you to work for some certain company because you can use your time much better. And I said, yeah, that's what it is. That is always the problem because
Sussex
time
was
is
here.
So precious.
He came and left. He got bumped or something. But I wish, if we'd write the numbers down, we don't need to be in the chat to call in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We can call in and not even be in the chat. I mean, June is here, isn't she?
That's fine.
Yeah, June is.
Yeah, you know,
that's
we can call
one
in
is June.
Independent of the chat, and it'll recognize you as your, you know, by your handle,
yes.
If you have an account on TalkShoe.
Yeah.
If June wanted to send me the information, I would make an account for her on TalkShoe and put her phone number in it, you know, so that it would recognize her when she called.
Well, I think they do recognize me.
Well, no, you're only
tonight.
Here as number one. You're
I'm
only here
number
as number one.
Yeah.
Right, but if your phone number was in the TalkShoe database, it would recognize you by whatever handle you told them.
All right.
Yeah,
I'll get Chris
I mean?
To sort that out for me.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. It's not hard.
Yes.
Well, that's practical. That's very practical.
Yeah, then she wouldn't be on the screen in the forum as just one, which is what she is now. She's one.
Yeah.
I mean, it ain't bad being number one. I mean.
And Bill, I think next week Betty will be able. Well, from next week onwards, she'll be able to join us because she's getting a new package. Which will enable us to make these long-distance calls as well.
Right. The next program would be the week after next.
Right, okay.
The first Thursday of February.
Right, okay.
Yeah, that would be great. I was hoping I received a letter from her today, and I was hoping to hear from her today. That would have been great, but it you know that she would be here today, but if she's not, she's not.
Yeah.
But she is
no,
in the forum. I mean, she did.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Betty showed up, yeah, Betty said, but she got bumped too.
Yeah, she must have done.
Yes.
That's just terrible.
Oh? But where is Elvis Sussman? He's listening in.
He's logged in again, but we'll see if he can get called in.
Yeah.
Sussex man, if you write the numbers down and call in, it doesn't, you know, you'll still be able to go in the chat when you can, but. At least you'll be on the phone. You won't get bumped from that.
And use the shoe phone, which is what I'm doing.
Oh, are you on that?
Yeah.
What is through Skype or?
No, because I've used it before I got Skype.
I've never tried to do it. You're on your.
Yeah, I'm. Well, I get into the chat room and then I click on the shoe phone and that enables me to speak.
Oh, yeah?
Hmm.
Oh.
And then if I want to leave, I just click the disconnect and come back in. And it takes literally a few seconds.
Oh.
Huh. Okay.
Again, a new... Yeah.
News to me.
That's practical.
I've tried it, but, yeah, you know, I tried Skype. I never tried the shoe phone thing.
Right.
I'm going to have to try it.
Well, do try it, because it's that symbol in the bottom right, and it's so easy to use.
Well, with the telephone, I know I'm not going to be interrupted.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
When you're hosting, it's you don't want to be interrupted. You don't want to be knocked out and have to try to get back in. Oh, that'd be terrible.
No.
If I get knocked out now, I really don't care. As long as I get back in to end the program.
Yeah, that's correct. But I'm glad that I could find my way over the screen. It's a lot easier. For the palm sign on the telephone here doesn't work. And today I was in an office here in the area, and I inquired, and they had another name for it. And I said, no, that's a railroad crossing. They said, no, we don't know we have that sign for it. Well, I did forget the name. Hey.
It'd be nice to know it.
Find out.
It would be nice to know it. To know what it is.
Correct.
In case we get somebody else from Germany, I can tell them what button to press.
Yeah, that's right. That's the problem. Yeah.
Americans invented telephones. No, you weren't supposed to change the buttons.
No, correct. Why should you? So far as I can understand here, we have to pay extra for these signs. We are normally not using them, but for whatever reason, you have to pay extra. And I say, okay, let's take the screen. It's a lot easier.
You have to pay extra for what?
Just for getting these signs connected. These special signs. Yeah, it's absurd. But you have to pay for anything here.
Some Jew must hold the copyright in Germany.
Oh, sure. Always. Anywhere. Wherever you go, you find them anywhere. Unfortunately. We have to fight forwards to make sure that we are cutting into the kingdom. Then they are eliminated. We don't need them anymore. Oh, yeah, I have been reading the... I should say so. I haven't seen it on the article about Mein Kampf, huh? That story. I have been busy reading it. But Mein Kampf, I think it's known to everybody, but it was not written by Hitler himself.
I don't believe that.
Does anybody know something about that?
I think that's Jewish propaganda. That's what I think.
Yes.
Yeah, the people say. But I have another book work, and an old book work, which my father obtained from England. And it was the Jesuit Strumpfel in Germany who has been writing that book. Not a Jew in this case, but the Jesuit. He has wrote the book. Because we're on time. It's a big book. Where could he have the time from? He had to do some certain kind of government.
He sat in prison for 3 years.
Yes.
He was in prison for 3 years or something. He sat in prison and wrote that book. I know you could write a book sitting in prison. I did it.
Yeah, some people are always more informed about something.
Well, of course, there's 100 million Jew conspiracies about Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler was a Jew. Adolf Hitler was a Rothschild agent. Adolf Hitler was a pagan. It's all a bunch of crap. They don't want to understand Hitler for exactly what he is. He was a Christian man who stood up to defend Christianity against the Jews, and we destroyed it. We are guilty for that. We are guilty. The English and the Americans are guilty of following the Jew to destroy Christian Germany.
Yeah, that's correct.
And that should be the darkest moment in our history.
And I feel fact it is. It's a horror. It is indeed so, yeah.
It absolutely is. World War One and World War Two, the darkest moment in Anglo-Saxon and German-Saxon history.
And I was going to say that it's important to look at the right copy of Mein Kampf, the one that was recognized as
right,
the official.
Right, the James Murphy translation is the only one that's valid.
Yeah.
James Murphy. Okay.
Right. The Ralph Mansfield translation is straight Jew garbage. He writes an introduction that Hitler was a babbling idiot, and then he translates him to make him sound like a babbling idiot. That's exactly what he did. It's straight Jew propaganda. And that's the one they all push in the stores.
Yes. And Murphy's translation was done before the war broke out.
Right. James Murphy had no axe to grind in 1938. That's exactly true. There's no political agenda in James Murphy's translation. He don't know how the war's going to turn out. He don't know about the Holocaust because there ain't one. It wasn't invented
yet. Correct.
James Murphy had no axe to grind. I read the Murphy translation and the guy, and his introduction, and I love the guy. I mean, he sounded like he rang true and sincere to me.
This is still available.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
but the whole thing's on my website. No, you can get PDFs and everything on my website.
MK.ChrisKennedy.org.
Get the whole PDF file right off there.
Yeah, that's right. I have it, and I have it here on the special place in the computer. That's correct. But I didn't know where it came from. Okay, then I had the right one. Okay, then I'm satisfied with that.
MK.
That is a good thing.
That's my website.
Now you send it over to me. I got it straight in. So I have the whole story, and I have been reading in it. And it's a huge amount of work to read through. It's tremendous. And I checked it immediately at the Eisenhower story for there. I know a lot about. And then I said, correct, that's all what's written in there is hard stuff where it is concerning about it. It's really the hard thing. and a lot more people should like to read it. But I got some information from the Netherlands, and someone trying to get someone convinced to read the Christogenia story with this Mein Kampf, etc. on it. Oh, well, they were immediately against it. Oh, there's something to be said about Mein Kampf, and oh, we don't like this. I said, yeah, you have to read it before you're going to say something about it. So I tried to explain them, but okay, whether they did it or not, I don't know. Still going strong.
Well, I would challenge them to read.
But never mind. But on the other hand, yeah, oh yeah, I'm busy with it. That's a lot of work, but
yeah,
it's very interesting.
Hello, Chris.
Hello, Chris.
I've been trying to get in through the talk show dial-up phone through the computer, and it's been letting me in, but I could see the board, and now I can see the phone, but I can't see the board. I can hear you.
Well, your television is terrible. I'm sorry, your telephone connection is terrible.
Oh, well, it's going through the talk show computer.
Yeah,
okay.
It's better to take the microphone from the computer. That's better.
Tia Tepe's is nice and clear, and yours is terrible.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, York, they got better phone lines or something. I don't know.
Well, they probably got better phone lines up north than in Germany.
It wasn't as bad as this last time, was it? You know, it's much worse this time.
Well, it's because I've gone through that talk show thing. You know, the blue.
I'm not
dialing on my phone.
It's better to click on the purpley coloured one, which is the smaller pro thing underneath to get into the chat room, and then to click on the shoe phone once you're in.
Yeah, that's what I did.
All right. Well, once you get into the chat room, you mean?
Yeah.
Once you can see the board. Yeah, look out and try again.
Try again.
Well, he's gone. Hello, hello, Benny. I know you could hear me, and I look forward to you calling in the next time we have this program. The first Thursday in February. I see you there. I hope you stick around this time. Tosha was just terrible.
Well, just bad luck. It's vibrating the voice, and it's not normal.
Bill, Betty had a question for you this evening.
Yes, she does. I read her letter,
right.
And she wanted to know about it's going to come to me in a second.
Shall I remind you?
Please, I read her letter over lunchtime, but so much goes through my head so quick, if I don't write it down, it's gone. She wanted to know about polygamy and about the letter to Timothy. See, that I remembered. She wanted to know about the letter to Timothy where Paul tells Timothy that a bishop, which is a supervisor of a local assembly in the real Christian community, where a bishop should be the husband of
one wife.
And let me say that, first, the polygamists will do just about anything to justify polygamy.
Mm.
They do. And let me say that the New Testament does not condemn polygamy. It doesn't. It's silent on the issue.
No.
However, the godly model in the New Testament is clearly for a man to have one wife, period. That's the godly model. And if Yahweh only has one wife, and I know they like to point to that parable of the 10 virgins and take it out of context to support their argument for polygamy. However, Yahweh made them male and female. Yahshua Christ said he made them male and female. That's one male and one female. That's all singular. Now, if a man wants to go have more than one wife, I look at it as his business, as his prerogative, and it's between him and Yahshua Christ. It's between him and Jesus Christ, whether or not he thinks he could justify that before God. Because the New Testament doesn't condemn it, and the law doesn't condemn it. And if you're a wealthy man and you think you could afford two wives and keep them both happy, more power to you. But the godly model is for a man to have one wife. And Yahweh only has one wife, and that's Israel. And if Yahweh was a polygamist, we would all wouldn't be here because we don't deserve to be here.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's my stance on polygamy. While the New Testament doesn't condemn it, that doesn't mean that if we sought to please God that we should practice it. If we sought to please God, we would be like him, and we would only have one wife. And I've had a bunch, and I'm a sinner myself, so I don't make any qualms about that. I've had a bunch, and one more wouldn't be bad either.
Well, I assure you, I even can't afford one.
Well, yeah, right.
Never life.
Right, but I mean, if a man wants to go have multiple wives, fine. But don't tell everybody that you're a righteous man, because the godly model is to have one wife, and that should be the example. And Paul uses that not only of the I'm going to look at my translation real quick. It's been too long since I've read Timothy. It's been too long since
I've
had the chance to read anything, I'm going to be honest with you. Well, I think he uses that also of the, in the King James Version it says deacon. Yeah, it's not only bishops. Yeah, you know, these people are the examples for the community. When Paul writes to Timothy these instructions for bishops and what the King James Version calls deacons, and in 1 Timothy 3, chapter 3, verse 12, it says ministers must be husbands of one wife, governing their children and their own house as well. Now, if they are the models for the community, then how should we act? Should we hold ourselves to a different standard? So if a man wants to go have two wives and party up, fine. But, I mean, don't justify that to me. You're not going to justify that to me. And it's between you and Yahweh.
Yeah. Correct.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Hi, Chris.
Is there any better now?
Not really.
No.
Oh, well, I've done what Judith said.
Oh, right.
You know, last time, Chris, you were better on the walkabout telephone.
Yeah.
It came through much sweeter.
And have you got a set of headphones?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Yes, I'm using it now.
Right. Well, perhaps
take a bit more distance to the microphone.
Well, I'll have to dial in again.
Well, it might be worth it because it's breaking up.
Right. And it's got to come up with a funny screen to, not the normal one.
Yeah, you have an echo on your signal. There's just simple echo on your system.
Right.
Change phones.
Yeah, well, I'll lock out and come in on the ordinary phone again.
All right,
I'll do that. Bye.
He would be a lot better off on the ordinary phone.
Yes.
What are we going to talk about next?
What
are we going to talk about next? So you wanted to talk about Revelation chapter 17. We'll wait until Chris gets back.
Yeah,
because there are so many versions going around of the interpretation. And I know what we believe, but over here, it's amazing what literature is being sent out.
And it's the same way here.
People.
I don't want to sound arrogant, but there's too many half-studied people in the scripture in the world.
Yes. But it's certainly a scripture for now, for this moment in time particularly. And
no doubt.
To me, just seemed so important that people understood the implications of the correct interpretation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, the other day I got an information from the Netherlands, from Chet Weisman, and that's concerning about the times in the kingdom, the new kingdom. How that, I can't believe it, but then, never mind. I'd like to know, marriage is no more necessary. We will not remarry or marry whatsoever in the kingdom. And then they gave me the information that the woman is going back into the male. Now, this is a strange thing, I can't believe. To my opinion, we are here, and the woman will be there in the kingdom as well. How is that? What can we say about that?
Well, it is no, you know, Yahshua Christ says that there's no need for marriage or sexual reproduction, but that doesn't mean that we don't have male and female roles, because Adam and Eve were created as male and female.
Yeah, correct.
And why should they be, why should we be any different? If we were going to be any different, why did Yahweh create us like that in the first place? It makes no sense.
Yeah, I would. Correct. That's what I... Because they told me that because Eve came out of Adam, and now when we are going back in the kingdom, that basically Eve is going back into Adam. I said, this is a crazy story. I don't believe it at all.
Is Joshua Christ speaking of the physical world or of the spiritual?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But I'm thinking about the standard world, the physical world, in this case.
Well, maybe he's talking about the spiritual world.
Yeah. Yeah. Because then what man and woman would be one and the same. In spiritual, yeah. But I can't believe that the woman has no right for the kingdom. I refuse to believe so.
Well, I would refuse to believe so also. Why do you only create women?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'd like to see that. If it's
they
only a male word, that would. Yeah.
I think those roles were created by God, and they weren't created transiently. I don't see any indication of that in Scripture, that those roles are
yeah,
created.
I see. Yeah, okay.
There's questions about the future age that we're always going to have. Until it gets here. But
yeah.
I don't see any, you know, there's a lot of beautiful women in Anglo-Saxondom, and I don't see them suddenly turning into men. I mean, that's
so am I. Yeah, I wouldn't like to see them crumbling in. I don't like the idea at all.
Right. I believe that the female personality was created by God to be complementary to the male, and
yeah.
You know, we should have one wife and be dependent upon each other, and that would be the ideal model. I mean, that's not the way it worked out for a while.
I would say so.
Today's day and age.
Yeah. I agree.
Anyway.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah, you better have one on your arm as one who's crawled into you. Yeah. You better be side by side. That's much better and preferable.
Right. I don't, yeah. You know... People can argue all they want over vain philosophies, but if something violates the natural order which Yahweh created in the beginning, I ain't buying into it. You know, I mean, you
yeah.
can go espousing whatever you want. Yet you're just basically making up something and conjecturing something and calling it a doctrine. And you always have to examine where doctrines come from. And if they come,
yeah.
if they don't come from Scripture, they come from the conjecture of men, and they're to be rejected.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's right.
And I like the word that we read, Yahweh was delighted with everything that he made and created. He said, it is good, it is good. And then when he looked at Adam, he said, it's not good for man to be alone.
Right.
So that was the only thing.
Correct.
Adam on his own wasn't sufficient. He needed that helpmeet.
Well, absolutely.
Yep.
So you don't have to worry about transmorphing into some kind of guy and Have a safe every day in the future.
I was delighted to be a helpmeet in my time. However, now I'm left alone, but I've got the Lord, so I'm still happy.
Well, right. We all have our natural goals, and when we accept them, we find happiness. And when we reject them and start sleeping with our own sex, and all we have is trouble and turmoil.
Yeah. Yeah, that's correct.
I saw two of the prettiest young ladies yesterday in the Walmart. I took my mother to Walmart. Maybe it was the day before yesterday. And I could take one look at them and know that they were lesbians. And I was just two beautiful-looking Irish girls, and I was just heartbroken. What's going on out there today.
I had seen that years ago in our shop, in the porcelain shop when I was still at work there in the 80s. And one of these awkward women also came in, but she made a mistake. She brought also in her other half. And when they were gone, my colleague said to me, "Oh, Matthew, what shame that woman is lost for a male." I said, "Oh man, I know what you're talking about, but now you can see how you can quickly make a big mistake if you see a good woman, or looking at least, look like a good woman, then it turns out to be a lesbian." You get the shivers.
Right, absolutely. And there's more of them. It's crazy. And I'm not, the guys aren't any better, believe me, but it just, when I two very attractive young women that should be off having some good white man's children, and instead they're playing with each other. You know, it's crazy.
It's a waste.
Yes, it is.
It's just the Jew loves of the that. Devil. Convincing.
The Jew loves nothing better than to see that.
Yes,
that's true.
Yeah, that's understandable because they don't want to deteriorate anything. Wherever they are, and how they are, and what, in any condition, whatever you do, anytime you're looking around, you see, here again is the end of a Jew. You get sick of them. I learned them from early childhood on, and I don't like them at all. I've been cheating a few times by them, so never again. But you have to be careful.
Well,
where's Chris?
Hello, can you hear? Is that any better?
Much better.
Yeah, sure.
Now, that's normal. That's good.
No, it's good going through the talk show system.
Well, it's evidently good if you're in York, and it's not any good if you're...
Well, it might be my headphones. Perhaps Judith's got a superior set of mics and phones.
Okay.
I bought this $15 set of Logitech headphones. They work great. I don't have them right now. I have a telephone, but they work just great. I'm happy with them for $15.
Well, mine are Logitech.
Okay.
Just that they're a bit big.
I think mine are Microsoft. That's probably why they're...
Oh, well.
Microsoft Live Chat, Alex.
That's those German engineers in Chinese manufacturing.
Yeah, probably. that's correct. Because these computers here are Fujitsu Siemens. That's a combination. That could be problematic, but so far these computers do well.
So have you got a Siemens computer, Matthew, seeing as you worked for Siemens?
Yeah, sure.
Does Siemens still make computers? Did they ever make computers? I know them from PBX's Siemens.
Yeah, but they didn't
I had
make
a Siemens
them.
PBX for a company I worked with.
Okay, but they still do make them. And firmly, basically it was Siemens, then it was Siemens Nixdorf. For 1 or 2 years, and then it was Fujitsu. Yeah, Fujitsu is
known. Oh, why would it be?
Basically, it's still Siemens. And they're very nice, but the company stopped, and the company stopped. They brought in our department some of the computer parts, and they said, you have to go downstairs in the clean room, because below the floor, if you open up the floor and tiles, then there is still a computer studying. And my colleague said, Matthew, go and you know how to do a wizard. I said, okay, I'll go there. And, well, it's now in front of me. I dumped it. It was end of game. And we changed the program, added another hardman disk to make it double as strong, and it works perfect all these last years. So why should I worry? Because I simply don't know what to do with it, and I throw it away. So I have now a Siemens microphone, and from another company, a headset. I'm satisfied. Right. Where were we in the discussion? Some more biblical stuff.
Well, they want to talk about Revelation 17.
Okay.
And my take on Revelation 17 is that the beast is the system of governments. All right? Five
yep.
have fallen, and the five that have fallen are clearly Egypt, Assyria, Medo-Persia, Greece. Egypt, Assyria,
yeah.
and Babylon. And the one it is Rome. And then one is coming that should last but a short time. And that, it seems to describe Napoleon. It could describe some of the, the Holy Roman Empire lasted a long time in name, but only a short time in power, in actual power.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, and it was never very united for any long period of time. The Franks and the Germans and the Lutheringians or the Kingdom of Luther, that Lotharingia, that they were always at odds with each other and fighting back and forth. Well, the one that is not and is the eighth, that's, you know, it's the same power. It's the dragon that gives its power to the beast. And the dragon or the Jewish money men behind the scenes, they gave their power to all the first seven beasts, the Kenites. They weren't always called Jews.
Correct, yeah.
They gave their power to all the first seven beasts. That it's the power of the of usury and money lending and commerce that they have mastered that never mastered.
I think it's appropriate that it's called a beast because all these empires being controlled by non-Adamic man.
Well,
you
right.
know, the beast is the Jew, you know, the serpent.
Now, if
yep.
the whole world system is various branches of the beast, which it is, I mean, the Catholic Church isn't the whore. The Catholic
yep.
Church is part of the beast. It was the second beast of Revelation 13. Well, which all these prophecies
yeah.
Are,
yeah.
are looks at the history of our race from different perspectives.
Yeah.
And also, the Bible uses different metaphors.
If
to
the
describe.
Dragon, well, right, exactly. Exactly, Chris. If the dragon gives its power to the beast, and the beast is this series of dragon-led empires which have ruled over and consumed the children of men, then who is the whore?
Israel.
Exactly. Thank you.
Yeah.
We are the whore.
Yeah.
We're the
yeah.
ones
yeah.
spread out over many waters. We're the ones who are fornicating with the kings and the children of the earth. We're the whore. Exactly. There's no doubt.
Yeah. That is right, yeah. That is correct. But
where,
in this case, where is Rome then staying, the Pope, in this case?
Well, he's part of the beast. I mean, he was the papacy was the second beast of Revelation chapter 13. It's just part
right.
of the system. The Catholic Church
okay.
is just part of the system. It's
right.
all
well,
part of the beast.
I think Comfrey said, used a good term, he said it was just another manifestation of the same, of the system. You know, it wasn't really the actual control, you know, the controlling power. That was the Canaanites, and that was just one of, you know, operating through the Catholic Church.
Well, right.
And
right.
In the New Testament, it refers to certain people having crept in unawares, so they were sort of infiltrating and debauching
well,
the church.
That's their pattern. They creep in unawares, and that's why that a dragon. Well, we know that, you know, that a dragon, that's all over the Bible. That's Revelation chapter 12 and all through the Bible. They're the serpent, the dragon, however, and they creep in unawares and they give their power to the beast. In other words, they usually don't rule themselves. But they are the money people behind the scenes, and they always set up a prop man in front of them. Like Barack Obama is a perfect example, or George Bush is a perfect example.
Yeah.
You know, you think Barack Obama's running things in the White House? He ain't running anything. It's that those two Jews, Rahm Emanuel and David Axelrod. They're telling them what to do.
The same as Gordon Brown in this country. He's another puppet.
And he's, right.
And Angela Merkel in Germany, she's another one.
In the same way.
Another Jew.
Definitely.
They're all puppets.
She came from the university there, the communistic university. You can't imagine more worse than that.
Right. Yuli Ponce writes in the forum that the Pope goes to the Roman synagogue and asks for forgiveness. And I wrote in my paper, and I should update the paper because it's not really current anymore. And most of my papers I try to write without depending on any particular time frame. But when I wrote Should Christians Embrace the Jews, I had written about – I opened it up with the Pope visiting a New York synagogue. Why would the Pope come over here and visit a synagogue? It's crazy.
Yeah.
If you're supposed to be a Christian or the leader of all Christendom, what are you doing in a synagogue? You know, it's absolutely hypocritical.
Sure. I don't go along a lot with Tex Mars, but he sometimes comes up with some good things. He did video is the Pope Catholic, you know, showing he's embracing all the other religions.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, he wears a yarmulke. He can't be a Catholic. He can't be a Christian.
I
don't care what they call those little hats, but it's a yarmulke.
But I know the last Pope, he was a Jew anyway.
Look at the color those cardinals like to wear. What color is that?
Yeah, purple.
And
Edomite red.
Edomite red. Yeah, it's horrible, but it is indeed so. Yeah, but indeed, we're talking about the dragon, and indeed it is a dragon. But on the other hand, you can see it also as a kind of octopus with all these long tentacles on it. Except that the octopus has 8 of them. Well, they have a lot more of them, and they are going with their sneaky fingers anywhere in.
And the headquarters is in the city of London.
Even.
London.
Correct.
Well, right, and New York might be you know, the new capital center, and it's not really, but that's the impression they like to give us. And they're still running things from London, there's no doubt, from the city.
Yep.
It's all the same, you know, New York, London, Geneva, Tel Aviv, it's all the same.
But it's
the Rothschilds in the city. They love to think that, they love for people to think that they've been eclipsed, that the London money power's been eclipsed or whatever, but they just love that so that you don't pay attention to them. You know what I mean? That they like to, they don't really care about their image because they don't like people paying attention to them.
That's right.
That's why because they own the papers, they make sure their name doesn't get in there.
Absolutely. And their name doesn't get in there. They don't want publicity.
And in the English papers, no doubt it's same in USA and Germany. Every so often they come out the list of the 10 richest people in Britain, but the Rothschilds never get a mention.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The people that really have all the money, you don't see them on that list. I mean, Bill Gates is just a bald guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure that the Rothschilds probably put him to shame.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, who knows? But I saw a program, whatever it was. That was on YouTube, maybe. Yeah, I think so. And they got the top 10 of them, the richest, and either on the top or almost at the top, that was Bill Gates. But I said, ho, 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 the Rothschilds should be at the top. But no one is saying any word about that. But it's clear they don't want to be in the front line with their name. And they are the devil themselves. Terrible.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's obvious that that's what's happening.
We have to make the best of it so far.
Those lists are made for the average, for the goyim. That's who they make the lists for, the goyim.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you better be a goyim.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that we are the whore. Israel is the whore. And you know, a lot of people think that, people have this marriage thing with Christ screwed up because Paul uses the word of the Corinthians, I have betrothed you to one husband, when he brought them the gospel. And betrothed only means engaged. The marriage supper of the Lamb, it ain't happened yet. It doesn't happen until the second coming.
Right, right.
That's when it happens. That's when the bride knocks it. That's when the bridegroom knocks at the door. You know, Israel's only betrothed to Christ so far.
Yeah.
And there's no wedding bells yet. I mean, it's so basically right now we are the whore. And when he returns, if you get caught without any oil in your lamp and you're off at
your
the merchants, yeah, where are the brides without oil? They're at the merchants trying to get it.
Correct.
Well, they ain't going to get it from the merchants. The merchants are on their way out. That's why we're told to get out of Babylon or suffer its punishments. When he returns, the people of Israel, they get caught. Fornicating with the devil and partying with the devil, they're not going to have a good time.
No. Sure it is. Now you better go to the best gas station and get your oil in time.
Yeah, I believe that the oil represents the knowledge to get the hell out of Babylon. I mean, that seems to me it's knowledge.
Yeah.
Well, the light in the body is the eye. Well, the light don't work unless you have oil, right? And that's got to be knowledge.
Yeah.
And that knowledge comes from Yahweh, not from men.
Yeah.
That's not university knowledge. That's scriptural knowledge.
I think a number of analogies where the word is referred to oil, like the two witnesses, and, you know, the lamp candles, you know, the lamps, and the two witnesses. And also, I think, you know, the 10 virgins, you know, can also be an analogy of Israel, because, I mean, all the virgins were sleeping, which is true of the Israel nations, but half of them had stocked up with oil. Well, I think that possibly could refer to those, mainly the northern parts of the Israel, who took part in the Reformation. And, you know, widely distributed the Bible, and the people had a knowledge of the scriptures, whereas in the Latin countries where the Pope still held sway, they didn't have a knowledge of the scriptures.
Well, yeah, but I think that there are probably a lot of people up north that don't, and in Bavaria and the Rhineland that do. I mean,
I mean, it's only sort of roughly, I mean...
The Protestants, I don't think they're really any... I know that the British...
No, what I mean is they had more opportunity in the Protestant nations, the inhabitants, to study the scriptures, whereas in the Catholic countries, that wasn't so.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only in broad terms, you know. I think it's just, you know, like a metaphor. But interestingly, when the Bible, before the Reformation, before Martin Luther and Tyndale, the Bible, most of the Bibles on the continent were in Latin, whereas in the Orthodox in Russia, they'd always had it in their vernacular tongue in the Greek and in Russian.
You know, it was late when the church, when I say late, I mean it has to be after the time of Bede, when the church started forbidding Bibles from people. Because Bede writes about the Bible being translated into the Saxon tongue in his time. So that's just a point of interest there. I mean, I could pull out the... I don't have my copy of Bede with me. It's upstairs, but I could pull the citations on that. I have it in my notes.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they were in the vernacular tongue, but in those days they didn't have the printing press, and it would be only the very rich who could...
Exactly.
Yeah. Somebody's having problems. Is that Tia Tiffy?
Is that June?
Yeah. I'm all right.
Oh, you're all muted. Oh, you're back online now, do you?
Oh, I'm back on, yes. I've been in a few minutes now.
I don't pay enough attention to the forum. I'm guilty of that when I'm in a program.
all of us in the UK, we get an hour's free time. That's why you see us going on and off, you know, to phone in.
Yeah, well, that's a good deal. I wouldn't complain about it. I mean, an hour's a long time to be on the phone at once.
Yeah.
I'm sure they didn't make up that calling plan with TalkShoe in mind.
That's easier to have it via the screen.
Well, if they ask me, I should just say, I ring my friends in America,
Bill.
In Germany, and wherever.
You ring your friend Bill in America and Matthew in Germany.
Yeah, and they'll send us the bill.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, that's my lucky thing that I had the telephone free because of the internet connection. I'm just paying €8 per month extra for the telephone. I can call as long as and at any time wherever I want to the United States throughout Europe, etc. That's good. It's not in the Netherlands in that way.
Well, you get it in Germany, a special deal in Germany, is it?
Yeah.
I've been using Skype when I want to call Europe and the last person I called like that was probably back in December. It was Betty. I called her for a little bit, and that was on Skype, and it was a pretty good deal. I mean,
yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, it works.
Yeah, I'm very glad it was Skype. So we have more opportunities, but that's the super best. For 10 years ago, you wouldn't think about it. Yeah.
Oh, Judith needs to be unmuted. Okay, I looked. I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Being back again. Yeah.
U.S. stock market down today, unemployment way up. I don't know how stocks are worth anything, American stocks. I wouldn't give you a penny for one. I don't care whose share it was. Just gambling. It's crazy. Because you set up stocks so they could figure out ways to maneuver money out of people.
Oh yeah, and then they put out, you know, rumors, and the company's, you know, making a lot of money, and people invest, and when they've invested a lot of money in the shares in well, then they engineer them to fall down, and then they buy them back for pennies, you know, get full control. I mean, that's what happened in the UK. You know, they nationalised all the utilities. Public were given shares. And then after 2 or 3 years, you know, they were going up nicely. Then all of a sudden there was a crisis. Oh, that was when we came out of the ERM, you know, Norman Lamont. And all the shares crashed. And, of course, the Rothschilds bought it back. In other words, the public had bought the public utilities for them. So they get it for peanuts, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how they act all through history.
Yeah, I know. My family was pretty wealthy in the 1800s after they came here, and they had a brewery and everything, and they lost it all in 1895 in a stock market depression.
Yeah. Sure, it was. Oh, I have seen even here in one of the church archives that our family in 1800, etc., for heritage that was left over, and they gave of these auctions from the Hungarian railway system some thousand, at that time, guilder was a tremendous amount of money, and these stock things were absolutely worthless after the First and the Best War. That means the churches got some money from people by heritage, and it was absolutely worthless within a few years. And that's crazy, but you can't imagine it. But it's, well, formerly you could even go and have your money in Russia at the Russian Tsar, etc. All gone, lost. Huge amounts of money were destroyed in that way by the Jews, as usual. It's
well,
dreadful.
I spent all the money I ever made. And when I was young, I did all right, but I spent every dime I ever made. I blew it. I never had a stock. I never owned a stock. I would never own a stock. If somebody gave me 100,000 shares tomorrow, I'd sell it immediately.
Yeah, you better do. I put it in my house. That's the easiest way to get rid of it.
Right. I was never in a 401k. I never owned a stock. I never had any of that.
Yeah. That's too risky in today's times. The only thing
it's too risky in any time. I mean, those financial markets are set up to remove money from people. That's how they're set up. They're set up to steal money. That's the only reason why they use this.
Well, in our family, we had an extremely well situation, but it has happened for a lot of people. And that way, the money of my great grandparents was placed in oil, in King Oil in the Netherlands. And they earned a lot of money over it. They had always backup by that means. My mother was the one who took care of the financial situation. And she always had a huge amount of money standby and available, even through the war. How she did that, but the bank did it. But it was always there, and it grew, and it grew, and it's still there. Not too bad.
Well, that's a rare instance, because most families lose it in one generation or another. The Jews managed to steal it.
That's correct.
That's why they have those markets. That's the only reason. I mean, anything that runs on usury is ungodly.
Yep.
Anything that operates on the principle of usury is evil, period. I mean, we're told not to charge each other interest on a loan ever.
That's right.
The only people you could charge were foreigners, wasn't it?
Exactly. Well, foreigners you'd better charge.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is that way you know, aliens can't come into your land and take advantage of your beneficence, because that's what they'll do.
Yeah.
And when
what they've done.
Yeah, it is what they've done. If you look at a recent American policy, you know, these small business loans, you got to be you got to have brown skin practically to get one. And that's, you know, they've come in, and the Indians and the Chinese have come in here and taken advantage of those policies, and now they own all the businesses. And a white guy can't get a business. He can't get a loan.
And then if you do set up a business, they got all these multitude of regulations, you know, they're controlled down to the nth degree. You have to have all these health and safety things, so you've made a loss before you started.
Well, right. There's very selective enforcement on that.
Yeah.
They penetrate the alien communities to enforce half of those laws.
Yeah, there are too many aliens even here, but it's anywhere.
Well, Jeremiah 10:31. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, this situation with Haiti, the earthquake and so forth, whilst I don't watch television, I am aware of other members of the family watching it and reading newspapers. And to me, it seems very overhyped. And there, everywhere I look, there are begging letters wanting donations to go out there.
Well, right, I'm sure, because a Jew is probably behind almost every one of those letters looking to take a big rake off and maybe send a couple of pennies to Haiti.
That's the way they operate. Yeah.
Because that's, you know, money that goes over there is absolutely no accounting for it. There's zero accounting for it.
That's right.
It's not going to happen. Anybody that sends money to Haiti is just a fool.
I agree.
And I'm sure a couple of 100 million white people will send money to Haiti. And the Haitians will be, you know, raping their daughters and hanging their men as soon as they can anyway.
Yeah.
I don't pay attention to television.
Might be more appropriate.
I don't pay attention.
I just mentioned something about sending a few machetes over there instead.
Oh, yeah. Somebody was saying that on a talk show program the other night, too, on one of our programs, that we should send millions of machetes to Haiti. And I would have to agree. They probably need machetes to cut sugar cane, maybe. So we should send them millions of machetes, is right. The Haitians rose up against the French nobility, and I think it was 1789. It may have been 1791. It was right around there, and they killed. That they raped and murdered every French woman and murdered every French man on the island.
And this morning on our early news...
What the heck is that?
Yeah, something jumped wrong.
The Haitians killed every French white man, woman, and child on the island. I think it was 1791.
And on our early news this morning, there was a remark made that the French... haven't really been pulling their weight and spending enough money and help to Haiti. And I just thought, well, it's a pity the people presenting the news didn't know the real history. And why should the French send them a penny?
Well, especially when it was the French who originally had the island and thousands of French Huguenots were murdered by the blacks.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And of course, it'll happen again. If white people go there in any great numbers, there'll be... You know, I mean, they're talking about all the children who are being taken to America to be adopted. And I think, well... Are these American people so kind-hearted they cannot remember and realize that voodoo will come out with those children?
Right, wherever they go, they bring Africa with them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the American military have made sure that a lot of, well, thousands have already been taken to quite a few cities throughout America, haven't they, already?
Yes.
Yeah, and every one of them's a murderer.
Yeah.
And it's just another way to bring down the Israelite nation.
Yeah, well, that's the prophecy, right? Yeah. So the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man and the seed of beast. And everybody who accepts it, everybody who eats the sour grapes shall die.
Yeah.
That's the word of Yahweh. It's got to happen. And you see Germany overrun with Turks. And you see Britain run with Pakistanis and all different other kinds of Muslims and France and Algerians and Greeks and Turks and Australia and Malaysians and Aborigines and Vietnamese. Every white nation you see all these aliens pouring into. And that's the proof right there that we're the people of the book. Because it ain't happening to any other race. You don't see a bunch of Chinese people going and settling in Zimbabwe. They know better.
Never. They do.
That's the proof right there that we're the people of the book. That all of our white nations are being overrun with aliens. And the only solution that we have is repentance.
Repentance, correct.
That's the only solution we have. We have no political solution. And we have no military solution because our own government acts against us.
Yes.
Yep.
No matter who gets in, and that's the dragon giving its power to the beast. That no matter who gets in, I mean, you could, the most conservative politician could run for prime minister of Britain tomorrow and get elected, and in 2 weeks he'll be doing the work of the Jews or he'll be dead.
Yes.
Just like Jack Kennedy or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, we believe that he is a Jew, so he'll definitely be doing their work. That's if he gets in power. But I think the three main parties, they're all in the same boat.
Well, yeah, they are. Just like in America, the main parties are all in the same boat. Yeah. And now I think that your BNP is fully compromised, too. So
definitely. I think that's without a doubt.
Well, somebody says it was the most Zionist party, pro-Zionist party in Britain.
And they'll let nationalist parties have little victories here and there just to make people think that they have hope in the political system.
Yes, it's a pressure valve, isn't it?
Right. Just like every once in a while we get a supposedly real conservative here in America, but they're never real conservatives. They're all Zionists.
Yep.
People, Americans are too dumb to realize that Zionism can't possibly be conservative. So we get screwed either way. It's all a game being played by the beast, by the dragon.
Yep. I really wonder how long and how much time you're still going to get. When you're looking all this up and adding it together, then we must be almost at the edge. The real edge of time.
Well, we always hope that we're at the edge, but I mean, it could go another 50 years. Who knows? 100 years? I don't. I'm not going to pretend to know that. Eli and I always go back and forth about this 2012 thing. We're at odds over that.
Yeah. I believe it. Now, I think it can't last that much longer. A few years at most, but certainly we can't hook. On December 12th. That's what I don't believe anymore. But
we can only go a few more years, but it depends on what you think a remnant's going to be. I mean, the last time there was only a remnant, it was only 8 people, right?
That's correct.
So
we might be in
for a rough ride yet.
Well, the problem is, after that, we'll get about 7 months to clean out all these bodies. How would you do that with 8 persons?
Well, yeah, right. That's exactly true. I wish I could name the 8 people, though.
Yeah.
I got a list.
The instructions were to occupy till he comes.
Well, right, and that word means to go about your business, basically.
Yes.
That's in
just
Greek.
Get on with your life, but make
sure
it's hid with Christ in God, with Yeshua in Yahweh.
Yeah, that's right.
But that doesn't mean that we can't. Well, we have to. We have a duty to elucidate the evil, and I know that it's harder in some places to do that than others. But that it's our duty to do that. And we have to find even where we face many more restrictions and a much greater task, we have to try to find ways to do it. That's what I believe.
Okay, that's right. We will always be helped.
Well, I believe so. And even, you know, I know that most of us here are in a predicament where we have to be a lot more careful about it, but we have to elucidate the evil. We can't put up with it. That's the way I see it. And I know too many people are willing to compromise too easily.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Yeah.
And they're just in bed. They're just virgins without oil.
The oil in. Yeah. Oh, where did you put that joke? I have an old joke here. And that's written in German. Gib nie auf or never give up. Oh, I have to put that on the net. That's very worthwhile. Yeah. I'm not going to tell what's on the journal. You must see it. that's concerning about this when you're going straightforward. I'll find it. I just had it in my hand like yesterday. I find that joke on paper. One of these peculiar cartoons. Yep.
Okay. I have a ton of stuff to put up on that Mein Kampf site. I just, and the New Ensign site, I just, it's hard for me to get to everything. I got so much stuff.
Yeah, I believe it. Yes.
Oh, by the way, yeah. Bill, I've digitized some of those books on Mein Kampf and sent them down the line.
Oh, great. I'm going to have to get by there.
The Bloody Streak. I forget the names of them. I did manage to get up to page, I think it was 43 on Russia 1.
Well, I got a almost perfect PDF on Russia 1.
Okay.
And then I noticed that I'm missing page 85, and I'm still waiting for Sword Brethren to supply it.
But when I get down, perhaps I haven't waited long enough, you get down to the bottom, and then you get, you know, like a outline and the red cross, you know, a blank on the screen. I don't know if that's because it's overloaded the memory with so many JPEGs. I don't know.
Well, I got on the OCR software, I got a perfect PDF file, searchable PDF file, and it doesn't paste in the Word perfectly. You know, there's some OCR errors when you paste it in the Word, but on the screen it looks perfect. I didn't notice a flaw in it of half an hour looking it over, but you know, in the PDF on the screen, in the PDF reader. But I'm missing page 85. I can't post it. You know, Sword Brethren had scanned that. And I, you know, he went to Louisiana to Gerald's and made a scan of it while he was there. And I guess he was in a rush or whatever, but he missed three pages. And pages 18 and 19 he supplied me with, or Gerald did, one of them did. And later on, when I made the PDF, I noticed that I was missing page 85. So I'm waiting for that so I could make that PDF. It's going to be like a 70 megabyte PDF. It's a huge PDF, but it's text searchable for the most part. And
that'll be great.
I'll have a download link for it when I get that page.
Also, I'm working on that one on the Phoenicians by Waddell.
Oh yeah, that'd be really good. That's that's British Origins of the Scots.
Yes. Phoenician origin.
I read that book. I read The Phoenician Origin of the Breton, Scots, and Anglo-Saxons. He has a lot of good stuff in that book, but he had the story kind of screwed up.
I wish I could have talked to him. I haven't actually been, you know, you see odd bits. I'm still concentrating on the formatting, but he seems to be inferring that there were Hittites in this country.
Well, he does. You know, he actually takes an inscription that in Hebrew letters says GD, and GD can only be Gad and no other tribe when it's talking, when it refers to people. It can only be Gad. But he tries to twist that into H, you know, the Keth and the Tav into HT for Heth, for the Hittites. That's basically what he tries to do. He is the epitome of the confusion that early English archaeologists had just because they took it for granted that the Jews were telling the truth about who they were.
Yeah.
And basically that's what it boils down to. They took it for granted that the Jews were the Hebrew Israelites, and well, of course, that the early settlers of Britain couldn't be Hebrew Israelites, so they had to be Hittites, because that's the only other that's the only other alternative.
Yeah. But he's got some interesting notes and details and inscriptions of various stones around the British Isles and different
places. Well, right, he does. He has a lot of good stuff. He wrote a lot of good books, but even a guy as bright as him could be tricked by the Jews lying about their identity, and that led him to a lot of academic errors like it leads all other academics. And it's incredible that, you know, that we think these academics are so smart, and they make all these stupid mistakes just because they think the Jews are Israel. So it leads them into all sorts of error. It's incredible the error it leads them into. Now, I mean, look at the, you know, in one of my papers, I cited the my Mycenaean so-called tombs found in Tel Dan. And that's because the Danans, the Mycenaeans were Danan. It wasn't because the Danans, the tribe of Dan was Greek. It's because the Greeks were the tribe of Dan. But the academics have it all backwards. Because they follow the Jews and they study the Bible backwards. It's crazy.
The famous way.
And then the subsequent historians copy them. And so the lies go on and on and on.
Well, exactly. Exactly. Exactly what happens.
It's a slow job doing the book because it's all of the footnotes. They're a real pain, you know.
Oh, yeah, I could imagine that. Yeah, you're right. You're doing a real yeoman's task in doing all that. Believe me, I know.
I mean, he had them all on, you know, per page, but I've aggregated them to per chapter. So I have to find them all, make sure I've got the right, give them the right numbers. And then I'm doing the other one, Bill, you know, the one about the languages, you know, the origin of, Eastern origin of the languages.
James Pritchard. Yeah, that'd be great.
That's another tedious job, finding all the characters and Greek characters, you know.
Oh, I'm sure, but you have to be careful to use Unicode fonts, please. If you don't use Unicode, the standard Unicode fonts like Arial, Lucida, and Tahoma, then it'll never work on the internet, and I'll have to redo all the fonts.
Well, I've got it from Microsoft Symbols, and it says in there, it all gives them a Unicode number.
Well, if you want to send me a sample and I'll
I'll send you a sample of one of the chapters I've done.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah,
and then you can tell. But I mean, I have a job looking at these Greek characters. You know, it's very small print. And, you know, you have different types of O's with different squiggles on the top, trying to work out which one it is.
Right, and the best font to use for them is Tahoma.
At the moment, I don't have them in. I have to...
Well, the Tahoma is a standard Windows font. It comes with Windows.
Yeah, but well, I mean, it hasn't got the Greek characters in it.
Yeah, it has every one of them. It's all I've used on my site is Tahoma.
Yeah, but what I mean is I haven't got it on my... I mean, the only pane I can look it up in is on the symbols, you know, these additional characters.
You hit file, you hit start, you hit run, you type CARMAP, CHARMAP.
Oh.
I don't care what version of Windows you got, it works. Hit start, hit run, and type CHARMAP and hit enter. And I don't care if you got Windows 2000, Windows 98, Windows 95, it works. And that's the character map. And you find you pick your font, and you go in there and you get the font you want, and you pick Tahoma, and you get the character you want, and it's no problem.
I'll have to try that.
And you copy and paste it right into your document. I do it all the time. I was in prison for 12 years. I didn't touch a computer. I came home. I hit start. I hit run. I typed car map, and it came right up.
Sorry, what is it?
Car map. C CHARMAP. It's the Microsoft Character Map utility.
Oh.
You pick your font. It shows you every font on your computer. You pick the one you want to use, and it shows you every character in that font.
But how do you know what key it's associated with?
Well, yeah, you know, I don't use the keyboard for those fonts because I can pick them out of character map faster, so I don't even bother. But it tells you, it gives you a code. And if you find, if you go to a common font and find other characters associated with that code, then you'll, and know what key is associated with those characters, then you can figure it out.
Well, I think I'll be all day doing one word.
Well, you know what? Once you learn the character map for the font that you want, it goes pretty quick because I could do it took me took me 11 days to do the whole Christogenia, all my essays on Christogenia. It took me 11 days to get all the Greek. Yeah, you know, and that's working 2 hours here and 3 hours there, but to get all the Greek moved over to Unicode.
Actually, where I've been using it is a Unicode map. You know, it's got a selection of all the, it's got Hebrew in there as well.
Yeah, well, Tahoma font has Hebrew too.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is you'll have complete control over what font you use.
Yeah.
Because not all those fonts are valid for the internet. And Tahoma, Lucida, and
I can change it because actually I think it's in Times New Roman, but I can change it to
Tahoma. You know, there's a problem with the Times New Roman and with the Arial, with the Hebrew letters. There's a problem with certain letters, notably the nun or the letter N and the yod. Are all screwed. They don't work in Times New Roman. You just get a stupid straight line. But the Tahoma one, you'll understand it and be able to see that it's a nun and a yod. So I've had
I'll send you one of the chapters I've done. And I mean, it's that you have to look because there's not a lot, great amount of Greek, but there is Greek. But I'm sure you, when you scroll down, you'll see it.
All right.
And tell me if it's okay.
Maybe someday I'll write the Putting Unicode Greek and Hebrew Characters Online book. I don't know.
But because I don't know Greek and, you know, looking at the characters, you know, if you knew Greek, you could say, oh, it can't be that character because it doesn't make a word, you know.
Yeah, that's a little advantage.
So anyway, I'm plodding my way through.
Yeah, that's great.
And I mean that language book is, you know, it's over 200 pages, so it's a slow job.
But now about the name and translating in Greek, huh? But now we have William. How would you translate that in Greek?
How would you translate what in Greek?
William.
William? Oh, it's like upsilon, iota, lambda, lambda, iota, alpha, mu. That's not a problem. You would use the U instead of a W. In Greek...
Okay. That's right. That's what I wanted to know.
in Greek, Latin, and Hebrew, the U and the V were the same character. And when they begin a syllable and are followed by another vowel, they're pronounced with the W sound. You know, there's a lot of debate in scholarly circles when Caesar crossed the Rubicon whether he said Veni, Vidi, Vici or Veni, Vidi, Vici.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he probably said Veni, Vidi, Vici.
Yeah, Veni, Vidi. Correct, yeah. That's indeed so, yeah.
U are interchangeable, and then phonetically the F and the V are interchangeable.
Yeah, that's very often.
So you could get a word that begins with a U in one language, and the same word basically could begin with a V or an F in the other.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's what you have in Dutch, because there are a lot of things written with a V or with an F. And foreigners, they don't know how to pronounce it or how to come across it.
Right.
Because you have stupidly to learn it. That's all.
And
in the German and, you know, the Gothic, the B and V seem to be interchangeable. You know, we say have, and you in Germany say Habe, H-A-B-E.
Yeah, Habe, yeah.
Habe.
Yeah, to have, Hafe, and Habe. Yeah, yeah, that's correct. That's the same thing in Dutch. It is Heeft, Habe, Habe, yeah, Habe, and is Heeft, yeah, that's right. It, yeah, that's a crazy thing, but it is so, yeah. It's, origin is then in Hebrew.
I don't know, Bill, whether you have the polite and familiar voice in Greek like you do in German.
Yeah.
Because
no,
in German,
Greek, the voices are.
You address anybody you don't know in the polite, and if you do it in the familiar, you're insulting them, you know. If you say, normally the polite form is C for you and do in the familiar.
No, the Greeks don't. The Greek language doesn't distinguish those two voices. I didn't even know the German did, to be honest.
Yes, yes.
They are.
You got. You, it's like two different languages in one. When they're speaking in the familiar, I mean, in the familiar. I mean, for us foreigners who learned a bit of German, we're always learning it in the polite. You know.
Yeah.
So it sounds a different language.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I never knew that. Yeah. I never studied German. Greek, and I took Latin for a year in school, and I took Spanish for 2 years in school. I didn't go to school very long, but I taught myself Greek, but there's no, the voices in Greek are like, the indicative and the subjunctive and the optative that they express a wish or a definite statement or a possible statement, but there's no polite or familiar voice in Greek, no.
And
I noticed Spanish, they make a slight distinction in some of the words that they use. You know, like the word T-U, means you, and that's the familiar, and the word usted, U-S-T-E-D, means you, and that's the polite.
Well, the French do the same.
That's the more formal. But the Greek makes no... Unless there's a distinguishment in the conversational language of Greek that I haven't seen, you know, because I've only read the books, but there's no distinction. There's no distinction recorded by grammarians either, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, because in the old... in the King James, so you got a bit of the Old English. You know, they had a certain amount of that in the Old English, like thou and thee, ye.
Yeah. Thou and thee. Yeah.
Which corresponds to the German, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, I haven't said that. I'm just going to log in and log out again because my hour's up.
Okay.
Oh.
Right.
Okay, see you later. Yeah, but because in the German language, when you're speaking to some in a polite way, then you, for you, then you're using Sie, S-I-E, yeah, Sie. But when you're speaking to your fellow mate, then it is just simply Du, D-U.
Ah.
That's what it is, that makes a difference.
Okay.
But if you have a high officer in front of you, and you're saying Du to him, oh, he's looking angry at you.
Oh,
you have to know
okay,
the correct
yeah.
form. This is very difficult sometimes. But you get used to it.
I wish I'd have been
the
able
same
to
is
study
for
German. I wish I'd have been able to study German in school. They actually took it out of our high schools about 3 years before I got there.
And oh, that's pretty bad.
I only had a choice. I had to take a language for 2 years. And I wanted to take Latin, so I took a year of Latin. I only went to high school 2 years anyway. And then I had to take 2 years of Spanish. Because the only alternative was French. And I could never twist my tongue like that. I wouldn't take French. I thought they sounded like very unmanly, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
The way
it's
the language
more warlike.
So I wouldn't take it. So I was stuck with Spanish, and that was, I don't know. It probably helped when I went to teach myself Greek. So.
Yeah. But if you want to hear a peculiar way of English spoken, then you ask a Frenchman to try to let him speak English. This is very interesting. But he's trying to do his best. But there is still that French singing of the words that is still in. And you will always recognize them. Oh, that's a Frenchie. There's no way.
Oh, yeah, I have some experience because I've been to Quebec quite a few times.
Yeah, there you can see it.
In Quebec, when they hear you speaking English, they hate you until they realize you're American. Then they love you.
Yeah.
If you're an English Canadian, they just hate you.
Yeah, peculiar, is it? Yeah.
Being from New Jersey, I never had that problem because I couldn't talk like an English Canadian in a million years.
Yeah, correct, yeah. But it's the lucky thing when you have been studying, etc., in the Netherlands, where you had to have formally four languages. Because you're living on a post stamp. The country is so small, it takes you 1.5 hours and you're across the country. And you have to speak another language. You know, it's so easy to learn these languages. And that's a real blessing. For a lot of people here, they are not speaking one other language at all. And if you're coming in here from America or from England, it's difficult to find people who are answering you, except for a hotel or so, that's normal. But for the rest, it's very difficult. And if, then you have to go to the girls. They are a bit more informed, mostly. It's strange that it is so.
I would think that in England, they don't really bother to talk the continental languages, do they?
Well, because when we go to the continent, most of them speak English anyway, so we say, why bother?
Yeah.
The only people who won't speak to you in English are the French.
That's true.
Right.
Well, they had this internship
on your shoulder.
Because they've
got an illusion of grandeur, because French used to be the international language, and they're a bit niffed because, it's
gone now. They're never
going to
get over that. They're never getting over that.
Yeah.
They'll be trying to speak French in the Kingdom of Heaven, and we know that English is the official language there, right?
Most probably.
I heard of a case where one of the leaders in Poland, I don't know whether these twin brothers are still in power, but a few years ago they were, and when someone remarked, as an Englishwoman, I'm amazed at the way you speak English. And one of these brothers said, I'm amazed that you, as a Christian Englishwoman, wouldn't understand that when the Lord Jesus returns to this earth, we will all be speaking English.
See that?
And I thought that was amazing, because I thought, well, most of the Poles would have been Roman Catholics. But that one knew. He knew the scriptures, didn't he? But I thought that was an amazing statement. And that's just 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's nearby. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
It's a typical case of the birthright. It's the language of the birthright.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The French will always have that chip on their shoulders, so.
Yeah. But I learned my way with the Frenchman years ago. We had a Frenchman from one of the optical companies in our optical laboratory, they were quite informed about surface cleaning for optical materials, which was very important. We had blottings on the optical surfaces. We couldn't polish them off, and they had a special material, etc. So he came over to the Netherlands in the laboratory, and that was all in French. And finally, at lunchtime, we could get the man so far that he was going to speak English for us. And he said, then you have to speak very slowly. I said, well, you better, we take care of our language. We will do it slowly. since that time, we have had no problem with the man. He was always speaking English with us. He liked it because he didn't dare to speak English. And that's strange. Why should you? And it was perfect, after all. He was a very nice man. That's the right case, probably.
Well, they've tried to get even with us. They've tried to force this metric system on us, and I won't use it. I'll never use it.
I'm used to both.
Well, that's a sort of rough came about with the French Revolution, didn't it? Before that, a lot of the continent was on the imperial system. I mean, in Germany, they still retain the name Pfund, pound.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, but with those metric measure, they still call it a pound, Pfund in German.
I'll never use that metric system. They could stuff it. I'll never use it.
It's so easy to work with. It's no problem at all. You don't have these quarter, half, 16, 7, 8, 16, 70s, or whatsoever. It's only going from, it's very simple. It's America.
So you've just basically proven that the French have the metric system
simple.
Because they can't do math.
Oh, that could be. That could be for school children. It's very easy. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's easy working with. Yeah,
oh.
And certainly if you have to make your screw threading, etc., and then you have to go and think about the quarters, halves, and sixteenths. It's so easy to have it metric. Just go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 millimeters up. It's too easy.
All my clothes are measured with the English system, and they all fit. Isn't that amazing?
Super easy.
You can't cut a cake into 10 pieces.
No, you can't. You're right. Tell them.
And you can't divide 10 by 3, but you can 12.
Yeah, sure, you can do it. But I never had any problem with the cutting in a cake. Probably I learned it very early from your son. But I like cake.
Because that surprises me. Do you know, Bill, why the founding fathers of America, they went on to the imperial... I mean, onto the metric system by having 100 cents to the dollar rather than, you know, 12 or...
Well, how many shillings are there to the pound? I never knew this.
20 shillings to the pound.
Well, where the heck does that come from? That's 10 twice. That don't make any sense.
No,
yeah, but there's 12 pence to the shilling.
Yeah, there's 12 pence to the shilling.
There were 240 pence in a pound.
Yeah, you had pounds, shillings, and pence.
I would have never guessed that.
Yeah.
I would have never guessed that there were 20 pence, 20 shillings a pound. I'm sorry.
Well, in the infants classes, we learned the feet and inches. We learned the pounds, the shillings and pence, the weights, everything.
And they're much easier
learned.
To work out in your head.
Yes.
Well, scientists might think it makes no sense, but the English conquered the world on that system, so I don't want to hear it. The French never conquered anything.
Well, I think that Yahweh created the earth on the imperial measure.
That's
we read it constantly in the scriptures.
Yeah.
Maybe in the English scriptures, but you wouldn't read it in the French translation.
No, they were refused to have it in.
the English mile and the Roman mile are very close, and the English foot and the Roman foot are very close. I mean, it's... You know, so a lot of that probably came from Rome. It's I don't know. It's hard for me to tell, but I don't know the history of measurement.
Well, I mean, when you look at some of the old German books, see measurement referred to in miles, milen.
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, yeah, right. But, yeah, you know, there was a Roman influence in Germany also.
Mm-hmm.
But the imperial system, I mean, the system we grew up with and the system that our race subjugated the earth with should be good enough for us, I would think. And I'm not adopting anything French.
No, I don't allow Brussels anywhere near my kitchen.
No Brussels sprouts.
Oh, no.
on a reluctant crowd, but none of their measures
yeah.
or their advice.
Yeah.
We had an item on our news recently where a very foreign-sounding man was warning people in Britain not to use butter because it was far too dangerous. So he was evidently advising us to use that plastic stuff that they call margarine.
Yeah, right, because the Jew has stock in it.
Yeah.
And makes a lot more. I would never eat margarine all my life. I wouldn't have it in my house.
And it gives you heart problems, so it's a lot of money for the medical and pharmaceutical industry as well.
Yes. If ever I'm in a home where there's only margarine on the table, I say, oh, I prefer dry bread.
Right.
Oh,
right. It's like motor oil.
Yeah.
I'm sure the government fed enough to it, fed me enough of it, but I'm not eating it voluntarily.
No.
Well, it's virtually liquid plastic.
Yeah, it may as well be. I mean, you may as well just go take the oil filter off your truck and have a drink.
Yeah.
You must all have pretty poor countries because of that. Because in the Netherlands, you were normally eating always margarine because the butter was so poor in quality that you refused to eat it. And here, you better take the butter. It's beautiful. And I found an even better way, a lot more simple. I don't buy neither butter nor margarine. It's a lot easier. I have the milk. And I'll just wait for it, and I get a huge amount of cream off it. I'll wipe off the cream, put it in the fridge, in the cooling, and the next day it's like butter. And I'll smear it on my toast and sandwiches, whatever. Huge, super, really top quality. And it's only from one factory, the cow. Better you can't have.
And you're just missing the churning.
Well, speaking of France, how many, you know, I get some visitors from France on my website. How many identity people are in France? There's got to be some.
Yeah,
not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Not that many.
I do get some visits on my site from France.
Yeah, France. Wasn't that one in Bad Tynock from France, June Francoise?
Oh, yes, Francoise.
Oh.
She was from France.
Correct. Yeah, from the Elsass. That's right.
Yeah.
In the Elsass area. That's right, yeah.
Well,
otherwise,
that's Germany. That's just under French rule.
Yeah, in a way, yeah. These people in the Elsass, they're dependent on the year 100. Which one has been winning the war or lost the war? They always are on the winning side. This time it was French. So they are French for the time being. Until it's French until the Rhine, the River Rhine there. And besides that Gauheim, it's about half an hour from the French border. You don't have to go west, but just due south. It's crazy, but the Elsass area is so far that it is, the borderline is the River Rhine at that area.
Yeah,
and
I know,
Gauheim,
it's a good chance
so
my ancestors
west,
are
it's just the best France. Yeah, it could be. It could be in the end. It's strange that we didn't know that. But then I had the map in front of me. So,
well, at
one
time, the Germans were Franks because in the time of Clovis, he ruled almost from the north, from the south of the Pyrenees, right across to where Poland is now. And then it split up into the West Franks, which were the French, and the East Franks, which were the Germans. Because
right.
you still got a memory of the name Frank in Frankfurt.
Is it? Yeah, there's a Frankfurt in there's two Frankfurts. There's one in
West Germany.
There's one in East Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the Oder. That's on the top here. That's correct.
And the other one is Frankfurt on Main.
Frankfurt on Main. That's the standard one.
Yeah,
and,
that's one of the Rothschilds' headquarters.
That's where they came from, unfortunately. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's where that red field was out of the door. That's right. Yeah, that's there. Yeah. And south of it, on the River Rhine, then you come to Worms. That's where the Reichstag was from Martin Luther. And it's half an hour's car drive from Gulam. It's so close by, you can see it on your map. And when you're going up from Nuremberg, then you're coming in the county area, and that's called Frankenland. So even the Franks were there.
Well, do we have any French language identity material I can put up, or I don't know. I'm asking, right?
Yeah, you can ask him.
Is there any French language identity material that exists? I guess not, probably. I'm just curious.
We've got some in German, but not in French.
Not in French, no. They might come from Switzerland, even. But we have the Swiss ladies there. But I don't know whether they are capable of speaking English. That's what I didn't know.
Oh,
I'm curious.
I contacted that chap in Denmark, and he apologized. He couldn't be on because he's going over to Dubai to running or something for a few days, but hopefully he might come on for the next one.
Okay.
Okay.
You know, yeah. Mikkel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mikkel.
Yeah.
I call him Mikkel.
Mikkel.
Yeah.
And Mikkel. Also, I phoned Alan to remind him, Olin Foder, and he forgot about it, but he said he had to go out somewhere with his family.
Yeah, he had actually sent me an email about an hour
later.
He sent me an email about an hour before the program started.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe 2 hours.
So what? Never mind. It's shortly. But that's a good thing. Yeah, well,
he's still having backwards and forwards with that Colin Farquhar.
Well, okay. I don't know. I'll tell you what I'd like to call him, but I don't want to repeat it. There's women here. That guy's just a moron. I mean, I'd like to talk to that guy one day, and I try to be civil with him, but he's just a moron. You know, when people are stubborn, and I consider people stubborn when they don't want to listen to sound explanatory scholarship.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Jesus Christ did not come down here in the 1600s and give the gospel to the King James translators. It's that simple.
Yeah, that's simple. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, but some people refuse to understand, and that really stubborn, yeah. Yeah, you can see that really regularly.
Yeah, he's a very obstinate man. But we have a lot of those, even in identity, so.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Tia Taffy was just saying, Bill, Colin is a lost cause. He's put typed in there.
Yeah, well, I was calling him Colin, and I meant it. I was misspelling his name. I want to shorten up his last name, too, but I don't want to repeat that.
I can imagine what it would be.
Yeah. If I spelled this phonetically in English, in American English, it wouldn't be very appealing as a name, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I refrain from writing him to that effect, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's just he's obstinate, and he wants the last word like a little sissy. And I let him have. I just didn't write him back. I wanted to write him back, and I just let it go. And I should have wrote him back, but I'm not a sissy. I don't have to have the last word.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, if you know these people, they won't tell you, go in and debate it. You know.
Call me up on a Monday night. Call in or out. Call in on this program. I'd invite him to come in.
Yeah.
You want to talk about scripture? We'll talk about scripture. I bet he walks away with his pulling the hair out of his head, but that's all right too.
Yeah.
The universalist position is: look at where it's gotten us. Look at where it's gotten us. Look at Britain. Well, where's the empire? Look at America. It's a cesspool.
Yeah.
Look at where.
The decline of the British Empire started in 1917 when Allenby took, Jerusalem on behalf of the Zionists. When you look back in history, that's when all the empires, the European empire started falling. I mean, shortly after Britain, Ireland was partitioned, the Tsar was assassinated. And then after the war, and then we lost India, and then eventually all our other colonies. So since that point, it's been a steady decline.
Yep.
So unfortunately, British Israel, as I call them, they saw that as a renaissance. The Jews are going back to Palestine, because they misinterpret, the time of the Gentiles.
Well, all they had to do was read the book of Maccabees, and Esau says, I will rebuild, and Yahweh says, I will cast down.
Yeah.
And the book of Obadiah, they're getting what they deserve with this genetic testing and this Wikipedia just abused them for saying that this has to be a load of crap, that the English and the Jews genetically can't possibly be related, and I got to side with Wikipedia on that one. It's absolutely true. There's no relationship between an Englishman and a Jew. The Jews are partly descended from the same ancestors, but we're just not brothers. It's not possible.
Matthew, you ought to give, I don't know if you can get a copy of that chart you got of all the haplotypes in Europe, showing that they're more or less match up and showing how they migrated.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'd like to have that if somebody had that.
And that also shows that the Jews are, they're related to the Turks and to the Turks.
Well, that's what they are. I mean, the Khazars and the Turks lived together happily for 300 years, the Khazar Turkish Jewish trading empire.
But if you want to have that map from the information about the DNA, etc., and where these people came from, you can also find that very easy on upia.org. Yeah. Upedia, like European, but it isn't. Upedia. There you can find all these informations about it. You can find where the various groups have been, the Tarkers and the Thracians and the Scythians, where they have been located. That's very well done.
I'll check it out. Upedia. Interesting.
Yeah.
Never heard of it. Yeah. See, you guys keep all these secrets to yourselves. I mean, it just ain't right.
Yeah. That's why we have the call here.
Because I'm sure there's, pity there aren't more identity people on the continent, because I'm sure there's a lot of information in their old history, that could be interesting, that we don't know about.
You're correct. Yeah.
And I did read somewhere that there were some old identity books written in German. Because a Jewish encyclopedia mentioned one.
Oh?
Yeah.
Now, McMurdo's writing about Britannia ruling the waves. Britannia hasn't ruled the waves since the end of the First World War, I don't think.
Yeah.
And his message is about 100 years too late, I think. It's crazy. He's still living in the 1800s. I love Kipling. If anybody reads Kipling's Recessional, Rudyard Kipling's Recessional. I really love Kipling. Wonderful. He's like my favorite poet. And he foretold it.
Yes, he did.
Yeah,
he saw the decline in Britain's in Britain's sea power.
Yeah.
And it's anybody that these The Colin Farkers of the world, that they want to think that anybody that blesses the Jews will be blessed, and everybody that blessed the Jews has been cursed.
Absolutely.
Well, it says that in the scriptures, doesn't it?
Yes.
And yeah, but it's talking about us.
As we see it as eyesight in it.
But they try and reverse it around,
don't
they?
Well, right, and if you just don't even look at, you know, the fact that they're probably all descended from the Edomites and Canaanites, there's no doubt. But don't even look at that. Just look at their fruits. And if they were the children of Abraham, they would do the works of Abraham.
Right. Yep.
Look at the King David Hotel. Is that the works of Abraham? Look at what they're doing in Palestine today. Is that the works of Abraham?
Sure. That's clear. Yep. That's no doubt about it.
I mean, blessing God's enemies is a very serious matter.
Well, absolutely. And just because they deny Christ, we're told that they're the Antichrist. And even Paul says we shouldn't even have any communion with them at all.
Yeah.
I see somebody's asking in the chat room how you spell UPDIC. I don't know if you can type it in, Matthew.
Oh, it's got to be probably EUPEDIA, I would think.
Yeah. Let's take that one. I haven't put one in there. So that is updn@was.org. Then you have to ask for .org and then probably //hoplogroup. Was that written right? I think it was that, yeah. And here he is.
Upedia.com or...
No, where is it staying?
Yeah, it's Upedia.com. Upedia. That's it.
I did bring it in, but where is it now? I can't see it. Oh, yeah, there it is. Yeah, Upedia.org, /hoplogroup. And when you're putting in that hoplogroup, and then you get all this, the whole thing... And the whole story, and you can click wherever you want. That's worth it.
Well, I put upedia.com /haplogroup, and I just got...
what did you get?
It didn't work out too well at all.
it's come up now.
I got it. European haplogroups. It's right on the top of the Upedia page, upedia.com, and it's one of the top links, European haplogroups.
Okay. HTTPUPA.com. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I've got it. Gypsy mitochondrial DNA. Yeah, right. I'm sure that's a mess.
MTDNA.
I don't believe that they talk about mitochondrial DNA, and scientists are a bunch of crap about that. That doesn't prove anything, mitochondrial DNA. I'm sorry. It doesn't prove anything as far as evolution is concerned. It demonstrates family relationships here, but it doesn't prove anything as far as evolution is concerned.
No, that part, they go so far back as even the Mongol people, and then the further south in Africa for thousands of years. That's just forget it. And timing.
Well, that's what
given,
I mean. They claim to think that they can extrapolate mutations backwards. It's sick. That's not science. That's Jew propaganda. Is exactly what that is.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
my ancestors didn't come from Lucy, and my ancestors never hung from tree limbs. I'm sorry.
Correct. Yeah.
And the BIWF were making a case that we had a few items on the DNA chain in common with the Jews. Well, I mean, it's been pointed out, there could be some common elements between ours and a tomato, but it doesn't mean we're related to a tomato.
Yeah.
Well, exactly, and there are common elements between ours and a tomato, but
that's right.
We're related.
Yeah. No, that's right. That's correct. That's why
the recipe for life is the recipe for life. I mean, Yahweh created the earth, and we all process oxygen and carbon dioxide, and we have red blood cells. All the mammal world, and we have a lot in common, and our whole base genetic maybe the first 80% or 90% or in some cases 98% is in common because monkeys have two legs and two hands too, you know, two arms too. But it's the differences that we have that they can never acquire. That's what makes us unique.
Yeah.
That's what makes
that's right.
the Adamic European man the pinnacle of civilization. And the Negro can never, ever acquire our genetics.
Yeah, that's right. It's impossible. It will always be a mixture, but that mixture
exactly.
doesn't work. Yeah.
Right. Well, one drop of gray paint and one drop of black paint in a 5-gallon bucket of white paint, and it's gray, and it's always going to be gray.
Yeah, gray and darker, and no more. And never white. And if you have all kind of colors, don't mix them. You get brown, a dirty mixture. Of brown. That doesn't work. You don't have colors anymore.
Exactly.
That's why we have to stay pure race.
Well, Aeschylus said, stain clear water with mud and thou shalt never find sweet drink. And that's, it's timeless. He wasn't talking about race. He was talking about something else, but it's timeless.
It's timeless, right. It's cool. It's very awesome. But now you have at least your PD. Now you can have a look and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
and
I'm going to poke around.
That's right. But you have to have, but stick to your knowledge about it and forget that of the Jews, because it's all in the Jews' role.
Well, that's why we need people to read the classics. That's.
Yeah. And that's why I'm just here searching in an old book. And it's unfortunately the last part only. Leer und Handbuch der Weltgeschichte. What's that? Learn and Handbook of the World History. Bent number four, volume issue number four. But I need to have number one. Because number one is concerning the Balkan area. And that's very interesting. And you will find it no more in any of our books of today's times. But this is written in Old German. And when you can read it, I don't mind. And then you can find a lot of information about these kingdoms and the people who were living there. And you search around on the internet, you will never find it. But this book is about 100 years old, and that works fine. It's a super thing. And I have once seen the original, and that's lost. It was an uncle of mine. And now I'm looking at the internet, and it seems to be obtainable again. I'm searching for it.
Which book is this now?
Oh, that is by Weber Baldemus. And it's printed in 1921 in Leipzig. Yeah. And that's concerning the world history. It's for students, etc. It was a handbook for the world history.
Huh.
And it was bent number four. It's a super fine book.
Maybe you could send me the information. I could look for it, if you wouldn't mind dropping me an email.
Yeah, but you can get it here. You can obtain it on the internet here. I've seen it already. But I can put it on the scanner here, and I'll send you a photocopy of the first page. Now you can see it's for George Weber. Yeah, Learn and Handbook of the Weltgeschichte. The 20 seconds round is it? Oh, that's very fine. Yeah, bent number four. But there are some more of it, and it's a beautiful book. Written in old German, old style, but it's again real original history. And of course, it stops. At the First World War. Yeah, it was given in 21, but it was printed in end of 1800. But it's a very nice bookwork. And it gives a huge amount of information about the history from the old times, from the old periods, until all these kingdoms who have been living in the last 1,000 years. But it's worth it. I'll go and try to pick it up, and maybe I'll buy it. But they ask you 30 euro per piece. So that means four times, it's 120 euros for them. That's pretty expensive. But never mind.
That's 120 pounds in our
money. Who is
money.
Hammering there? Yeah. Who is hammering there? Somebody is losing.
It's me. I'm just turning the heating off.
You need a hammer for that.
It's old England.
You said I didn't know that it was that worse. You could expect such on the continent that there, you know, something can happen even there. Oh, never mind. So it is. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure there must be a lot of interesting books, you know, on the continent.
Well, there are so many of these good shops, and I don't have any.
You need to be a good linguist to be able to read them.
This is sure. And a lot of people do like to know more about the Celtic people. And I'm living here in the area, and a lot of good books about the Celts, but it's in German. That's the difficulty. And if you get it in English, then it's concerning about England and Ireland, etc., and France. The difficulty, there's so much good work about it that it's all here and written in German. And nowadays we
The Germans did a lot of excellent work in archaeology and anthropology in the 19th century, and a great, you know, because of the enmity between England and Germany in the 20th century, a lot of that was forgotten about or suppressed or never really made it into Anglo culture.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah.
Which is a damn shame. I mean, I know that. I've seen Englishmen like Sharon Turner and early, you know, the Loeb Library. Even though the Loeb Library is American, you know, it's produced by Harvard, most of the translators on that project were English.
Yeah.
And their footnotes were very revealing. You know, and a lot of them cited German writers from the 19th century. And somebody's making an incredibly annoying noise in the background, like,
Well, I think this is giving food for his dog.
It's me just getting something to eat.
Well, sorry.
We had the idea you're... We were having an idea who was crunching.
I don't know. I thought I was watching The Galloping Gourmet for a second there, Julia Childs or something.
Yeah.
I thought he was feeding his dog.
I'll give him a minute to get something to eat.
Food sounds like a good idea. I'm from Leopold. Leopold from the Loop Country. Yeah. Leopold, yeah. Welcome. Was that welcome for Cotto in Saxon? Yeah. But I always like to go in these old shops where they have the old books, but it is also expensive that you have to be very careful for your purse. That's why I take care of it. And when you're going to England, you have a special place, and I think it was in the area of Wales, and there's a village, or more as a little town, and it's filled up with bookstores, and you can buy books like crazy. I better go with a large bow around it, because I would be empty. I would have no more money left over. I learned that from my niece. She's also saying the same thing. Oh, is there a bookstore? We're going in. I said, yeah, we better do. But it's expensive.
Chris hung up on us. He didn't have to hang up. He made me feel bad now.
Oh, no, he'll come back in again.
I can still hear him. He's putting some lids from some flask or bottle on the table. I heard him.
Bill, I was about to say. Speaking about old books, just recently I managed to pick up Layard's Nineveh.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
1851.
Wow, how did you get that?
It was just... just hanging around in this shop, so I picked it up and bought it. And it says, Murray's Reading for the Rail. So obviously, this was the sort of level of scholarship of people using our railway system, and this was supposedly the sort of thing they would wish to read. I mean, today you couldn't get people to read anything like that.
We have become a retarded people. There's no doubt. We are retarded.
Yeah, that's right.
People in the 1700s and 1800s would have thought that we were a bunch of blooming idiots. I mean, we collectively, because most of us don't read, engage all our time in frivolity, treason, and silliness, like soccer or football or whatever.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Sitcoms. Yeah. I wouldn't watch a sitcom. I'd rather go hang myself. How can you sit there and watch sitcoms? What, pour that garbage into your brain day in and day out? And it's all absolutely silly, trite garbage. But
yes, it is.
American and English culture and I guess the continent too are full of it.
Yeah, certainly.
People don't read anymore. People don't read at all. I mean, I was the same way for two-thirds of my life. I know I'm right up there, you know, but that's the way it is. You fall into the culture, and you either got to pull yourself out of it or get swallowed up by it.
Yeah, that's right.
But the average Greek, I mean, spoke 2-3 languages. The average person at the time of Christ spoke 2-3 languages, and that was considered normal, and that they couldn't, you know, get books, but they would have read more probably, and books were dear and expensive. And today books are cheap. And what do we have? Even the bookstores are flooded with pulp novels.
Yeah.
And even in prison, 90% of the guys that read books read pulp novels. And they could tell you everything about the latest James Patterson or the latest Tom Clancy, but they couldn't tell you where they couldn't tell you where Munich was. That they couldn't tell you anything about Otto I or anything about Pericles.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, you know, it's incredible. People are retarded today. Video games, they fill their heads with garbage.
Yeah, that's right. That's all rubbish what they're using. Yeah, that's correct.
Bill, can you unmute Sussex, man? He promises not to make any more noise.
Well,
he's coming back.
Still dessert time anyway, right?
Here he is. Here he is again.
Yeah, I picked on guys mercilessly for reading novels. Oh, you're pouring more of that Jew trash down your cranium, huh? Yeah, you know, that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's like eating out of a cesspool. Yeah. Christ says, I am the bread of life. You know, people don't realize they read that just like you are what you eat, it's the same thing for your mind. You are what you eat with your mind. And if you pour Jerry Seinfeld down your throat every night on, you know, from the television, then your mind is garbage. It's the result of that. And your quantitative thinking capacity and your qualitative thinking capacities are going to reflect what you've poured into your brain for the last however many years.
Yeah.
That's so
that's
true.
What it is. Yeah. It's a pity, but it is so. Yeah.
Also, the television, I mean, it's sort of geared up to give people short time span concentration because you only get a few seconds on one frame and it's going to another frame.
Yeah. Right, and real learning comes from real slow, hard meditation and thought and reading, and the real learning comes from thick, dusty, old books.
Yeah.
And people today, they want, you know, when I debate with people, you know, mainstream church people that grow up in pop culture, that they, if I can't prove my point in 30 seconds, they're not listening anymore. And I know they're not listening. Yeah. And I can't prove my point in 30 seconds. I mean, I might be able to get a few sharp barbs in. But you can't.
If anybody could.
You can't illustrate 3,000 years of history in 30 seconds. And that's about all they'll listen to you for, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sickening. It's crazy. And I tell guys right up front, I can't give you ancient history in sound bites. You can't understand the Old Testament in sound bites or classical Greek or Roman culture in the time that a TV commercial takes to run. That's we're all in that shape. The entire West is in that position. And Clifton Emmaheiser wrote this thing about television and this passage from the book of Adam and Eve. And if you haven't read it, I urge you to read it. It's on the front page of Christogenia. Well, it might be on the second page by now. I'm scrolling down for it.
Oh, yes. I've seen it. You sent it out as an email, didn't you?
Did I? I don't know.
I've seen it.
I may have. But it is so succinct. It's talking about television, man.
There's nothing else
it could be talking about. It's amazing. It's a perfect description of television.
Yeah, Clifton
wrote it 10 years ago, and I was redoing Clifton's website and putting everything in the text database, and I saw this, and I was like, wow, I was looking for that, and I had to post that because it's television. Yeah. Clifton's right. It's television.
As
you say, there's nothing new under the sun. I've heard mentioned, very old books about the magic mirror, they refer to.
Let me tell you something. Paul calls the Jews the prince of the power of the air. And that makes no sense until the 1920s. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That makes no sense in any culture. It makes no sense in classical Greek, the prince of the power of the air. There's no context for that in Greek. There's no context for that. Until the 1920s and 30s, when the Jews bought up the media and we started the electronic media.
That's certain. If you imagine that, that's right.
And it is the prime means of control.
Hypnobox, as some people call them, television.
That's what it is. It hypnotizes people. It sucks them in.
Television.
And then it brings them back every night because they want more of it.
Like a drug.
And people that watch television think they're so clever because they could figure out every plot. An idiot could figure out most of those plots. Any movie in the first 30 seconds, you know who did it and who the hero is. It's crazy.
Yep.
99% of them, anyway. It's just sick. And people think they're so clever, filling their minds with that Jew garbage every night. I castigate guys that I see reading, like somebody mentioned Danielle Steele. And I tell guys, what are you reading that garbage for? It's all crap. And they say, oh, well, he does good research. And I'm like, how the hell do you know he does good research? You never read a real book.
And the worst of all is you're paying for it as well.
Right.
Waste of money.
Dear Cotto writes, Bill, don't forget. How can we forget the Roman circus sports culture? And that's exactly right. And the best thing, I wish I had the time for it, and someday Yahweh might grant me it, that Tertullian wrote De Spectaculis. And it means about the performance, the circuses and the performances. And he was writing about bread and circuses, basically, and how unchristian that is. And that Tertullian's De Spectaculis, you could take that and you could read it, and it's only about 30 or 40 pages, right? If somebody could only put that in modern language for today's football, boxing, baseball crowd, it's so perfect. It's so perfect. And you could take Tertullian's De Spectaculis, and he's writing about these circuses and things that and distractions that the Romans had, and it just fits today's culture perfectly.
Yep, certainly. Yeah, Tertullian.
And he does an excellent job at showing why that, all that garbage is not Christian. That Christians should not buy into that crap. It's a distraction.
Yeah, that's it. His true channel is the evil Nazi channel.
And that's one of the planks of the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion is that we will produce distractions. We'll feed them distractions.
Yep.
Constant distractions.
Mm-hmm.
And that was before television was invented, they wrote that. Tell me that's not prophetic. It's Satan spelling out exactly what he's going to do to us. And they could cry that it's a fake and cry that it's a fake all they want. It's real. It all happened. It's incredible.
It is. It's right
that's
there.
That's always been part of their satisfaction, bringing things forward in advance and then, you know, saying what they're doing.
Well, right, but don't you think Yahweh lets them do that? And just to try to, you know, that know that some of his children are going to see it and know that his word is
and
true.
And waken up.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah, waking up, yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
And it's interesting, before Quarleton
Court's
own disaster, there's some movie that's been, you know, it's almost an exact replay of it. You know, in advance, you know, more or less telling you what they're going to do.
And they did.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they did.
Yeah.
And they're telling
yeah.
us all the time, it ain't yeah. real, it ain't real, it ain't real, and it's all happening.
Yeah.
Well, they had that film of the Twin Towers, didn't they, about planes going into skyscrapers before it actually happened, I understand, in the States.
Yeah, right, in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And you know, ProThink has the video on it, that 9/11 Missing Links video. And those Jews are on Boulevard East in Weehawken. That's one of my old haunts. I used to take romantic walks along there with my wife.
Yeah.
Because it's a beautiful view of Manhattan at night, you know?
Correct, yeah.
And I grew up about 6 or 7 miles from there. And the Jews are just driving, you know, that moving van down that street, and they're all dancing in the street. When the Twin Towers are falling down. Man, that is so sickening. But it makes it so obvious that they were behind it. There's no doubt.
Yeah. But there are still idiots who don't want to believe it.
Right. It's incredible.
Yeah. It's still an incredible idea by all means, because I was on the top of the towers years ago in the 70s. And I would come back, and there's nothing left over. It's still crazy.
Well, yeah, I remember. I grew up, you know, underneath their shadow when they were being built.
Yeah.
I came out of school every day and looked across the bay at New York and. You know, every day you would see a little more of the Twin Towers go up each day.
Cool.
This is like 1972, 73, 74 in there.
Oh, I didn't realize that they were so recent. I thought they'd been there a lot longer than that.
No, that's it. They were built in the very early 70s.
Yeah.
Early 70s, that's it. They were only 25 years old when they fell down, maybe 27. I don't remember exactly, but I remember being in the 7th and 8th grade, so I graduated grade school in 74, so they were built right around that time.
Yep.
And we used to sneak over to New York when I was like 12 or 13, me and my little brother, and we'd hop the train, we'd jump the turnstile and get on the train, we never paid, and go over to the city. And we had to pay to get up to the Twin Towers, to get up to the roof. And we used to go up to the roof we used to take the money we earned on deliver newspapers and go up to the Twin Towers on Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
We used to like to do that.
Then we'd walk
around New York and tease all the gypsy and the Turkish food vendors on the streets.
Yeah. Yeah, for I remember, I was in 69, no, it was 68, December 68. I was for the first time in Europe because I came from the European Southern Observatory in Chile, and I flew over Europe back to Europe.
At that time, that was the first time I was even in Wall Street, but Twin Towers didn't exist at that time. That's crazy. And I went on the Empire State Building to see it. I have still photographs of that, etc. And I have been later on the Twin Towers, and that's crazy. Within 40 years, that's all vanished and all was changed. It came up and it is illuminated. Very strange when I'm thinking about it again.
Yeah, that's, yeah, I'd never been in the Empire State Building. Passed it up 100 times, never went in it.
That happens when you're living there.
Yeah, you take everything for granted. You know, I've never been to a Broadway play. Not that I would want to go to one now, but I mean, when I thought that was, I'd never went to one. Never went to a Broadway play, never went to Radio City Music Hall. My wife would make me take her to, she bugged me for years to take her to see the Nutcracker at Radio City Music Hall, so I bought her the CD, you know? I bought her the video.
Yeah. It's easy. It's easier.
We'd go to see the Christmas tree at Rockefeller Plaza once a year. She'd make me, I conceded that.
Yeah. Well, that was enough. Yeah.
I hated New York City because it was always crowded, congested. I hated the people. My escape was to go up the mountains, you know, to drive in the other direction, get away from the city. So I never partook of most of the Manhattan lifestyle.
You must have seen it once, but it's enough.
Well, I went to the, you know, I used to go to the museums a lot, to the Museum of Natural History, and I think I went to the Metropolitan Museum of Art once, and I just hated that.
Yeah, that's right.
I suppose it would have been all these Jewish modernist paintings, would it?
Well, yeah, I couldn't stand that garbage.
Yeah, that's rubbish. That's rubbish.
Total garbage. Yeah. All their art is garbage. All of their satire is garbage. It's all shallow. Yeah. It's all filthy. They don't produce anything that's not filthy. They have to talk about sex. They have to talk about seedy things. Otherwise, they can't produce art. That was a major theme in Mein Kampf also. Hitler noticed that in the 30s. All of their art is filthy. Everything they produce is satanic. The tree is known by its fruit. There's no doubt. The great masters, now they were painters. I mean, you look at those 15th, 16th, 17th Dutch and German painters and English painters. They were painters. This garbage they produce today, it's all trash. I'd make a bonfire. Probably wouldn't even be any good for that.
That's the rubbish we have in today's time. You can't use it. That's right. My grandfather, great-grandfather, who was an art and teacher in landscape painting, he would have been angry about the rubbish of today's times.
Well, where are we going next?
Oh, it's 10:45 here.
Well, that's, you know, the calls I do, the open forum sessions I do at night, it's early in California and in the Midwest, and it's 3 a.m. here when I want to go to bed.
I dream now 10:45 in the evening.
Well, it's only 9:45 here, so we're not too bad.
Yeah, it's still prime time.
Right.
It's a pity there aren't any others who can join in from the continent. I don't know, what about Jetta and Annika?
Well, Annika, Jetta I asked for, but she doesn't have a microphone, and she has only the webcam system. And that from the little computer she has. But you need to have a headset and a microphone extra. Well, she doesn't have it. And Ben, her husband, doesn't have the time right now because he has to do the tax paperwork, etc. So she's hampered. And even on the show of Eli, she can't come in because it's the same problem. But she can listen in. That's all what she can do, but no more. Maybe she's listening in, but I don't know. I told her to be alert on it. But if she's coming in, or she did, or she had the time or not the time, she has to do a lot of writing work and translational work. So her time is also limited.
She can't use her phone, you know, or perhaps they don't have cheap calls in Holland.
I don't think so, yeah. That's all in due hands. They like to make the money out of it.
England, but they do give us free calls to the States for an hour or something.
Well, those telecom companies in Europe, they were monopolies. Are they still monopolies? I know Deutsche Telekom was a monopoly for a long, you know, long after there was competition.
No, well, they've so-called been breaking them up. I mean, in England, it used to be all BT. You know, British Telecom had a monopoly, and that has been gradually broken up.
Well, right. I mean, the prices never go down when there's only one. That's just the way it is. I mean, they just don't like to compete. They get forced to compete.
Well, there is even a lot of competition here, but I still stick to the German Telecom. And they offered me that just for €8 a month extra, above the 40 I have to pay for the internet, and then I can just phone and call all the most important parts of the world. So I said, yeah, I have no reason to complain. I'll take it. It's the best I have, and I have to use the €8, otherwise they are lost.
How many euros do you have to pay?
But I asked for it. Extra €8 per month extra. Just €8.
Oh, well, that's not bad.
That is exactly, it's simply super. And I didn't mind. I can have a phone call with Vera Johnson in the middle of in Missouri or in California. It takes an hour. So what? I don't need to pay for it. It's all prepaid. So that's super. It's a magnificent deal. But how such is possible? To me, it's crazy. You're never earning money on a system like that. But how they can organize that, don't ask me. I don't know, but I'll have the profit. That's the point. Yeah.
I was going to say, Bill, we could do with somebody, you know, to translate some of your articles into, say, German.
Yeah, that'd be great if anybody wants to volunteer. I mean, I sure as hell can't do it. Yukoi, I don't want to say his name, Frederick Forsyth, I think is his pen name. He's translated a lot of my articles and even some of Clifton's and Eli's. He's done with Clifton's first 20 teaching letters so far, I think. He's done a lot in Slovak. But I mean, German would have a much wider audience than the Slovak, I'm sure.
Yeah, I might expect it.
His father's a Carpathian German, but he doesn't speak German. He was raised in Slovakia. He speaks Slovak, so.
But that's a difficult language. I would like to learn it.
Well, he keeps teasing me and asking me if I want to proofread, and it's all Cyrillic letters, and it's just...
Yeah, it's Cyrillic, yeah.
I can't deal with it.
No, neither would I.
It's all Greek to me.
Is there any relationship between the Cyrillic and the Greek? Do they sort of come...
Well, the Greeks brought, you know, the... Even the Germanic tribes never used their own writing their own language for writing. Uh-huh. You know, the ones that wrote in before the fall of Rome, the ones that did write wrote in Greek or Latin. And basically it's pretty late, you know, writing in German compared to the Greek and the Latin. There's all sorts. And the Slavs, they never wrote either. They had a language, but they never wrote. They didn't write. And writing was very special to, you know, that's why the Germans, they had the runes, right? The Norsemen had the runes, and the runes were magic. And they attributed magic powers. They became very superstitious over what they didn't really use. The Slavic tribes, they didn't write until the 10th, 11th centuries. When Cyril, I think his name was, and that's where we get the name Cyrillic, he was a monk, and he went and developed an alphabet for them and taught them how to write. Yeah. That's basically the mainstream story anyway, but it's pretty believable.
And also a lot of people don't realize that the vernacular language, you know, changed very quickly over a small area. I remember my German teacher telling me in Switzerland, even up to the First World War, one people in one valley spoke a certain German, and they couldn't speak to the other people speaking another type of German in the other valley.
Right.
Well, right, that's true. Yeah. And Luther's Bible did a lot to bring the German tongues together, the German dialects together.
Yeah. Well, here in Bavaria, we have 155 different dialects. And imagine if you're multiplying that for Germany itself, I think about 1,000 different dialects. The whole country.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's not just High German and Low German, that's for sure.
That's right. I have here even that the woman has passed away now. But she was an acquaintance of the woman where I was for the first year when I was in here with my house in the construction I couldn't live in. So I was on a farm here and I rented a room there. And that lady, she was speaking a kind of Bavarian. I definitely could not make one word out of her speech. And then I was here with the locals in the pub here, and I was talking about that woman. Oh, you're talking about Mary. Oh, we even can't understand her. I said, how on earth can I understand her? I didn't understand that local dialect. It was strange. But that can happen. It's just easy here. Hey, I always wished I had studied German. Who's that? Oh, yeah, that's William.
Oh, yeah, that's me typing because, one of the gentlemen in the forum is of German. You know, he's, I think he's second generation German if he's who I think he is. And he spoke German or knew German as a younger man.
Yeah, but it's very good, though.
My grandfather. Was German, and he my great grandmother was actually she came from Baden-Württemberg in the 1890s.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Her family, all right.
Yeah,
so she came here from Baden-Württemberg as a very young girl, and she spoke fluent German all through her life. And my uncle has reel-to-reel tapes of her singing German folk songs.
Yeah, probably.
But after World War One, it was a they tried to disassociate themselves from their German heritage. German in New York and fighting in World War One, and my grandfather was a small boy when that war started, they tried to disassociate themselves from the German heritage, and my father used to tell me that. And my cousins got, you know, in World War II, when they went through grade school, through elementary school, because they had a German last name, they always had problems with the other kids who were mostly, a great deal of them were English and Irish, and they always had problems with the other kids.
Yep.
So that they tried to disassociate it, so they would never learn German. So my great-grandmother is the last one that spoke German and from my relatives here.
Yeah, and then it's indeed over. That's correct. That's interesting, yeah. Who was the great-grandson, great-grandson, I think, of Bismarck. He went to England for studying there at the universities, etc. And from England on, he was any time, pulled a leg, because he was called Bismarck. So, the British said, and think the Bismarck was always said in his area. He was used to it. But indeed, they were more or less feeling ashamed for their own language, for their own name even. And it's a pity.
Yes, it's all pity. It's horrible.
The guilt is always at the dual side. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, even our Queen's family, they came from Germany, and all the Queen's families from Europe, they're all related to Germany. That's their center where they came from, all. And there's basically nothing wrong except that they were all cheated by a famous group of people with their long noses, unfortunately.
Was talking about translating, wasn't it Gary's wife who did some translation into German for Eli?
Yes, somebody did that. Somebody, you know, Eli has that book in German, his whole book.
I think it was Gary's wife who did it. I think she's German.
The Great Impersonation, that book. It's all
yes,
in
yes. Website.
Yeah. So yeah, that was no light task.
Yeah, that's mostly it's a very difficult task. I don't know what it is to translate it. That's a horrible job.
Well, it needs somebody fluent in both languages, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm sure some of my papers aren't going to really be too easy to translate into German.
Yeah, imagine here, my uncle's name was Adolf, but he only referred himself as Eddie. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's just crazy. Eddie, Adolf.
Yeah.
I'd grow a little mustache in hell with them.
I know someone whose family's grandmother, she had the name of Hitler, the family name Hitler. And they were living in Canada, and they changed it in Hirtle just by twisting over two of the figures. And it was Hirtle, and there was no further problem. That was an easy way to get out of it.
Well, up here there were a lot of German people, a lot of German settlers from. Actually, a lot of them were refugees from the 30 Years' War. There's a whole big. Like 10,000 families or something came over here in the early from 1710 to 1714, I think, and settled in the Mohawk Valley in upstate New York, and they were granted the land by the Queen of England. So there's a lot of Germans up here. There's a town on the other side of where the town I live in called New Berlin. And up here they insist you pronounce it New Berlin.
New Berlin. Yeah.
They try to make it not sound like Berlin, you know. And I keep calling it Berlin, and I tell them I'll pronounce it the way I want. I can spell. That's what's important.
That's right. But when you're going to Missouri, then you can stumble over the Germans. So it's jam full with them. There's so many of them. They immigrated over the years, but hardly anyone is speaking German.
Right.
Amish still speak German, don't they? The Amish.
Upstate New York and Pennsylvania, and a lot of the Amish still do speak German, yes. Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Indiana, Southern Illinois, Missouri, North Dakota, South Dakota. They're all loaded with Germans, all those states.
And in Louisville, I think it was Louisville, when you're going up the Ohio River in Missouri, then you're coming to Louisville, I think it was. And there you can still, right on the street, you can buy bratwurst. That is the fried sausages. And it's written in German. They said bratwurst, and you can buy it straight ahead.
It's a damn shame that we throw our culture away so easily, but that's the way it is. What can I say?
But it's anywhere.
Throw your culture away, you have nothing left to stand on, and you just find yourself in bed with a bunch of Negroes and Mexicans. What a shame. And now we're Egypt all over again, is what we are.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
true. Because before the World War, I believe German was the international language for science.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
With so many scientific things came out of Germany.
Yeah, a lot of great scientists.
Yeah.
And Einstein wasn't one of them.
No, he was a plagiarist.
He was a plain fraud, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was certainly one of my friends. And the most, let's call him in this way, the man who took the most difficult part of physical, theoretical physics, and that is concerning always the same, and that is that horrible, difficult, any student in physics knows about it, how difficult that is. And about these, what is it now called? The famous name for it. But the man who is the real one who's doing it, that was Max Planck from Germany. Max Planck?
Yeah.
He was the man who knew all about it, and not Einstein. But few only do know it. But that was a real, very well person who knew exactly about the most difficult parts of the physics. He knew it. He knew exactly, but spirit, how it was working. And that's the most difficult theoretical part. And but that was not for Einstein. No. His wife created that theory, the relativity theory. And it was given by the beginning under both names. And of course that was changed, and his name was only on the, in the end. But it was definitely wrong. Yeah.
Well, that I didn't know, but I know Einstein's a plagiarist.
He is.
And anything that the Jew media is producing is fake. None of it's real. If the Jew media is promoting it, then it can't be true.
All right. Right,
and they pushed Einstein down everybody's throats.
Yeah. Yep, certainly.
And evidently he got very poor marks at school. He was more or less a dunce bowl again.
Yeah, right. And they try to say, well, that's because he was so smart.
Yeah.
Their blatant lies are incredibly evident, and most people will never see it. It's a shame.
Yeah.
A Jew's moving his lips, he's lying.
Yeah.
If you see a rabbi, you've already seen a crime.
Well, so it is. We have to live with it for the time being.
Yes, we do, but I mean, we should feel count ourselves blessed to be able to see what's going on, and that just makes us angry. I understand that, but we have to witness to the evil and ride this out. That's the way it is.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah.
Because our brethren who engage with the world and embrace the enemy, they're the whore, and they have to be punished for that. That's just the way it is. There's no doubt.
Yeah,
you know, right now they're getting punished, and they don't even know it. They don't. I can't imagine the people in the ancient world having been more enslaved than the Americans and the Brits are today, and the Germans.
Yeah.
They think they're free. That's incredible.
Yeah. Slaves who are free. Yeah, it's crazy.
50% of their 50% of their income goes to the Jew in taxes, and he gets the rest of it by stealing their savings. And these people think they're free.
Yeah. It's far from free. But we have it in the company.
That they don't. I mean, when our ancestors were enslaved in Egypt, at least they knew it.
Yeah.
At least they realized there was a problem.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I remember from the company that when we had an invention for the company, which was an improvement for the equipment or whatsoever, and a saving, we got a premium for it, and it could be something. 50% was stolen by the state. We never saw it. It was immediately blanked out. And we finally said, yeah, for what purpose are we inventing things for the company? We are not having any profit of it. We simply said, we don't do any invention anymore. Over.
Right.
And that was a real risk. But we said, we are not going to waste our energy. And besides, the responsibility was continuously on our shoulders. For we had invented it and brought it in the equipment and improved it. So if something was wrong, it was your duty. And we said, nah, we will never do it again. That was too dangerous for us.
Well, there's no doubt.
Mistake. It's a great shame and mistake.
Marxism destroys all productivity in a nation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's a killer disease. And the people don't understand it.
Nope.
Yeah.
If you don't benefit from the works of your labor, the average man just isn't going to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even the average white man, he's going to be disgusted, and he's just never going to be happy, and he's not going to work. And Christ said that the workman is worthy of the fruits of his labor. And those who don't work don't eat.
Yeah, that's right. If you don't want to work, you don't eat. Yeah.
And even Adolf Hitler's socialism is nothing like, it's not Marxism. It's not anything like what we know as socialism. He even said, he quoted that, those who don't work don't eat. If you don't work, you're done.
Yeah.
You have to work.
Yeah.
So Bill, number one's come in again. I think she needs to be unmuted.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
That should have done it. Hey, I think I clicked.
Is June there?
Yeah,
June is listening in again.
Oh, there she is.
Thank you, June. Lovely to be back.
Hi, June.
You I thought maybe you gave up on us and went to bed, you know?
We thought you'd gone to sleep.
No, I'm not asleep at all. I'm just enjoying listening.
Yeah, she's brave. Yeah. What in pre-war Germany productivity was rewarded unlike today? Yeah. If it had made men to work in the fields, that's what it is. Yeah. We have our duty. Let's do it. And enjoy it whenever possible. Yeah. That's why I'm still at work in my house in science and research. Can't give it up.
Have you told Bill about the big observatory you've got in your garden, you know, the giant telescope?
Yeah, he even sent me the pictures. It's great.
He knows about
it. I'm afraid I'll probably never get over to see it, but yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to know anything on astronomy, Matthew's the one to ask.
You can ask for it, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I already did. I asked him about the eclipses of the moon.
I think I missed that, because that's when I was trying to fiddle around with this talk show thing.
Right, that's correct. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right. And there are so many beautiful things to be seen in the sky, because it's the light which comes from the universe realm. There is no human finger came in between to disturb it or whatsoever. That's the most beautiful thing you can see. It's just given
to
us.
You know, I took no advantage of that last year.
Your eye, which, yeah, because it's just that super thing that the universe is so beautiful to see, because it's the light which comes straight from GFS' own house. He is the creator of all that. So we better pick it up and see it and look at it and take pictures of it. And with the new eye, the repaired Hubble telescope, we are seeing now galaxies no human being had ever seen before, because they are so weak and so far away that you have to have special equipment on board of these satellites to observe it. But we can see it. It's incredible. And that's what I really appreciate. And that's modern times. That's the other side, or the negative side of today's times, that we have beautiful things to observe and to work with, which were formerly unthinkable. And that's a crazy super thing. And that's what I'm so glad about, that astronomy is one of my fields to work in. I may not complain, and I won't. Yeah.
Since I came to upstate New York, there's beautiful sky here at night, but I stayed in all summer.
Yeah.
I didn't get out once to really see the stars. That's terrible.
Yeah. And I'm waiting for it.
Here in the UK, you don't see a lot of the stars because of all the street lighting and everything.
Right.
Well, right, and that's what I'm trying to say is I spent so long being away and you couldn't see any stars and you couldn't even be out at night. And, you know, yeah. I came from Jersey City. I grew up. Where I grew up was right across the water from New York City, and it's it's so bright there you can't see anything.
That's right.
You can't see anything except the buildings in New York at night. And now that I'm up in the country and I could see all the stars I want, I didn't get out one time all year. I never took any advantage of it, I'm trying to say.
That's the change I had from the Netherlands. Where
I was on talk show all summer.
Yeah.
Now it's too cold to stand out there at night. Now you got to be a lunatic to stand out there at night.
Is it very cold with you, Bill?
Well, yeah. I mean, it typically goes down to about 8 degrees at night or colder, I mean, at this time of year.
Well, eight degrees Fahrenheit or centigrade.
The typical wake up, you know, morning temperature is probably about negative 10 for this month.
And, negative 10. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, about minus 10 Fahrenheit is pretty typical for this time of year. In the morning, you know, at the coldest point of the day.
I think it's
kind of unseasonably warm this week. It was 24 today, I think it went up to. Yeah, I'm talking in Fahrenheit, too. I can convert to Celsius in my head, but I can't talk in it. I can't convert that quick. I know it's... It's like minus 32 divided by 9 times 5 to get from Celsius to Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
But I can't do it that quick in my head.
Well, it's so easy. When water is freezing, it's zero. It's just 0 degrees. And anything below is colder. Yeah, that's so easy. And a normal good temperature here, room temperature, is some 18 to 20 degrees C above freezing point. That's good.
Did the French develop the Celsius system? Was Celsius French or German?
He was German.
Okay.
He was German.
Then I could use that system.
And
Fahrenheit sounds like a German name as well.
Yeah, it does. It's got to be. Fahrenheit,
that's correct.
Yeah,
that's right. It's also German. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, and Celsius is because it's Celsius. It's more or less Latinized, and that was in his days normal. Though maybe the real name of the man was Sal or something like it or whatever, but he made it Latinized. It's the Celsius. That's correct. But the lowest temperature that I'm going outdoors or stay outdoors in the observatory is minus 15 degrees Celsius. And that is very, very cold, I can tell you. But that's the limit. Beyond that time, I don't go. That's not
so, so what is that, about 10 degrees Fahrenheit?
I don't have the right thermometer here. Normally, when I have these double thermometers, which are giving both scales on. I have them in the living room, but not here. No. And I have a conversion table here, but not at hand. I think I better have the old thermometer in here, then I can tell you exactly what it is. So it is.
Well, I'm still on Fahrenheit. Yeah. I can understand that better than anything else.
Yeah, in Britain, they still use Fahrenheit?
When it's lower than that, it's very cold. And we've had some of those this last 3 weeks or so.
It's colder up in Newcastle than down here in London. I mean, hasn't been below freezing for the last 2 days. All the snow is gone.
I'm surprised they still use Fahrenheit in Britain, because in Canada, you got to use Celsius. It's a pain in the neck.
Yeah.
Well, in the papers, they give it in Celsius, but some of them give it in brackets Fahrenheit as well.
Right.
You know, it's a sort of a gradual change. They're trying to get people used to Celsius, but I like Fahrenheit because it gives you a better indication of the temperature, because you get nearly 2 degrees to every one of Celsius, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes on the radio, when the weather girl gives it off in Celsius, somebody will turn to and say, come on, give us that in old money. You know you're going to get Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
Well, to me, Fahrenheit makes a lot more sense, because when it's cold, it's negative, and you know it's cold when it's negative.
Yeah.
Well, it's still cold with us when it's below, 28 or 25 is Fahrenheit is very cold for us.
Yes.
And that's 7 degrees below freezing in Fahrenheit terms.
28 Fahrenheit. I could go out running in shorts and a T-shirt in 28 Fahrenheit. It'll never be cold.
Yeah.
I don't put a coat on until it's like 10 or below. I go outside. I go out for hours at a time, and I just put a flannel shirt on.
As somebody remarked came over from Canada. They used to very low temperatures, but when it was just below freezing or just above freezing, they said, "Oh, I wouldn't like to live, but it feels a lot colder because it's the dampness in the air here which makes it feel."
Yeah.
A lot worse, because when I've been on the continent in Austria, we've been sitting out on the mountain and you look at the thermometer, it's 5 degrees below freezing. Yeah, it seemed quite comfortable.
Yeah.
It's the humidity that does it. Same with the heat, a dry heat isn't as bad as a humid heat.
Yeah.
And of course, it doesn't matter where we are in England, we're near the oceans.
Yeah, well, I grew up in Jersey. You can't get much more closer to the ocean than that, even in England. So you can only get so close before you get wet.
Yeah.
Well, we can get wet when we're nowhere near the water. Because sometimes the air is so heavy with water, we can get wet if we're standing out. However, it's all God's good weather.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, talking about the weather, did you see any evidence of that so-called harp puncturing of the stratosphere, that caused all that cold weather?
I don't go out. I don't see anything.
No, I wondered if Matthew did in his telescope.
Oh.
No, you can't see it in the telescope. It's, that will be too easy for them. If anybody could see it in a telescope, then that would be too dangerous for them. Now, this is the sneaky, tricky way that they do with the electromagnetic signal and a bit too much of it. They have too much power in it, and that makes it so dangerous. I mean, you can't see it. Yeah, maybe at the moment when they are doing it, but then you have to know where it is exactly. But we are living, they did it somewhere above Norway.
Yeah,
they've
gone the name of the place.
Well, that's right. It's questionable.
And it was reported by the Russians.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm living here 48 degrees up on the globe, and June is on 55 degrees up on the globe. But
you guys are pretty far above where New York is.
That's right, because New York is at the level of in Spain, Madrid.
Yeah, I know. We're actually that seems like it should be pretty temperate here, but it's not.
No, it's not, because you're having the sea wind is there,
But mainly you get the wind from the north and from the west, from the land. And we are getting only the warm wind from the ocean. That's why it is so warm here. That makes the climate here.
Well,
and
my mother says there's only three seasons here. There's winter,
yeah.
Almost winter, and still winter.
Yeah.
And it is. I mean, our growing season, we can't plant anything until June 1st.
That's right.
And whatever's not out of the ground by the second, third week of September is usually lost.
Yeah. That's correct. Well, my friend William from the Netherlands, he went to New York by plane, and it was even difficult for them to land because it snow covered over anywhere around about, and then they finally could get the right plane, and they were flying to the south. And in the south there, he said, it was in Florida, and he said, well, it's crazy. It's an hour or whatever, 2 hours or flying to the south. He said, there's warm weather here, and they have a snowstorm up there. It's crazy. How's that possible? Yeah, that's the difference in climate there. That's normal in the States.
Yeah, it's strange. Because we are on a latitude with Madrid.
Yeah, correct. It's about 40 up.
Don't mind you, Madrid gets pretty cold in the winter because it's inland a lot.
It's inland climate, and it's in a
sort of rally, and you quite often look at Madrid and it's colder than London.
Yeah, that can happen. That's right. Yeah. And that's why the people are going to the south there, to the borderline there. Which it's 40-50 C above. Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, down in Algeciras and round there, I mean, it's nice and warm. And Gibraltar.
Yeah.
The British enclave in Spain.
Yeah. That's the difference between England. How many feet are there in between England and Spain?
How many feet?
Just 1 foot. Yeah, just one. Step over the border in Gibraltar and then you're in Spain. There's just 1 foot.
Yeah.
Or 1 foot in actual.
1 foot.
Yeah.
One foot.
Yeah, 1 foot. Feet or 1 foot.
He's speaking American. He's speaking phonics. That's
demonic. Yeah. But that's a crazy thing there. And then how many monkeys are there in England? Well, they're free, they're in the zoo. No, there are a lot of them in Gibraltar. That's England.
Oh, most of the monkeys in America, they're not in the zoo at all.
Oh, yeah, they're walking the streets, are they?
They're all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You don't have that problem in Bavaria, do you, Matthew?
So far north, but my good one in a while.
Not unless there's an American base nearby, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
That's
a dangerous.
Or a British base.
Yeah. But so far, it's pretty well so far going, and we may not complain living in here, but how long? We don't know. Yeah, but we can survive here. It's a very well area to live in here, and you can live on the land here. You have the farms round about here. You can get your milk free of milk straight from the cow, etc. I get my corn straight from the mill, so I can make my own bread with the flour. I can buy here straight from the mill without a factory in between. So it's for living. Perfect here.
You see, I haven't even seen here yet. I mean, we have the whole dairy culture here. I could, if I wanted to, I could buy, if I could afford it too, because it's not cheap. Milk off the farm is not cheap here. It's probably about 50% more in cost than milk from the supermarket, at least, maybe higher than that. But
can you get unpasteurized milk?
Well, I haven't looked for a place yet, but there are a lot of farms here that will sell you milk and cheese. But
yeah,
I haven't seen any grain. I haven't seen any small family granaries.
Oh.
None. Not up
that's
here.
Bad. That's really
I mean,
sad.
There's a lot of farms that you could buy vegetables from, you know.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any grain.
Oh.
And it just might be that I haven't found it yet, but I've been to a few of the farms, to the local farms, and I bought bread and, well eggs and milk and cheese, but we haven't seen I haven't seen any grain.
Perhaps it's New York's not a grain growing area. It's in the prairies, is it?
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah.
Now, probably the growing season isn't long enough for grain.
But
I know
that the early settlers grew their own grain. The early colonists.
Yeah. They did. They did.
It was 100 years before we had the plains, you know.
Because Matthew was saying in Bavaria, they have a special grain that came from Egypt, didn't you, Matthew?
Yeah. It's the old grain. It's how they got it and how they obtained it, but I don't know. But it's the basic corn, which they use in Egypt for bread baking, and that is regrown in here in the south, even in Switzerland and in Austria. And it seems to be that it is in the Netherlands to be grown now as well. And they call it, it's dinkel called in here. And it's called in the Netherlands spelt. Yeah, something like spelt. And I don't remember what they called it in the translation for Egypt and things like that. But
the Romans
used
spelt.
The dictionary, honestly spoken. Otherwise, what is it? How was it called, spelled?
Yeah, the Romans used spelled that, or at least English translators have translated the word that way.
And I was saying, there's a farm there here that sells all different breads, and some of theirs they had spelt bread, so that's probably what it is.
Yeah, that's the same. That's the same. Yeah, spelt bread. Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
we can buy spelt flour in Newcastle on Tyne. And the bread ready-made, spelt bread.
Super. It's very healthy.
Yeah.
It's a bit more expensive, but it's very healthy.
Well, anything healthy is more expensive, isn't it?
Yeah, much.
The Jews don't like you to have healthy food.
No,
yeah, that's right. It's not because it's not 50% more expensive. No, I have to pay for the normal white flour. Let's say for the fat, it's 5 kilograms, about 10 euro, and then I paid 11.50 for the dinkel, for the spelt. So it's not that much more. Whether that is, I don't know why that is, I have no idea, but you can see it here growing in the fields round about in the summertime, and I'll just go to the local farmers, or even go to the mill, they have here a little mill. And they are selling you anything for bread making, even fantastic things and fancy things. You can get it all. And a lot of people are making your own bread. It's an agricultural area here. So they are not willing to buy anything or all in the shops and in the supermarkets. They like to do it themselves. And baking their own bread, making their own cakes and all that sort of things, it's done all by them locally. That's no problem here. And I even can get, I was too late by ordering my venison for Christmas, so I couldn't get it in the supermarket, but I wanted to have for Christmas time venison. And I asked locally here, and they said, oh, you better go to their farm there. They have a farm shop, which is having a butcher, or a messer, as it's called here, and you can get it straight from the farm there, so you better ask them. And I got the most beautiful pieces of venison straight from the deers who are walking around here, round about in the forest, around in the whole area here. They said, that's the best you can get. So I collected it, and if I have guests here throughout the year, I can get venison. That's a luxury, but we have it here. That's super. You can't have better.
So nobody has anything to say to that? No.
You know, talking of the Egyptian wheat, I believe that that originally was taken out of the pyramids, out of the tombs. You know, there would be a... And after all these centuries, when they planted it, it would grow.
I think scientists in Europe have traced all of our wheat, all of our olives, all of the... We brought all of that with us into Europe from Mesopotamia and Egypt and the Levant, Palestine.
Yeah,
I remember.
It's very the sciences and religion and the historians. None of them really work together. If those fields worked together, they would realize that people 3,000 years ago in England, they wouldn't have had very much to eat. That it all came from Mesopotamia and the Levant with the people. It all came from the Near East with the people. The science helped prove the identity is what I'm saying. And archaeology, it all goes hand in hand and anybody that doesn't understand the migrations of people from looking at all that data is just an idiot. I get kind of flustered because people, it's so hard to make them understand that.
Yeah, that's a shame. It's the truth. The scientists should join far more together as what we're doing in today's times. And they have to dump the long-nosed people. Because they are telling them only lies and things, and it doesn't work. Yeah.
Well, if you take everything that's Hebrew or Roman or Greek out of German and Anglo-Saxon and Irish and Scandinavian culture, you have nothing left. So what did those people do before that? The answer to that's easy. They weren't there. They weren't there.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay. I mean, this has run its course. I think. I don't know. It's up to you guys. But I'm about ready to go eat dinner. And
you better do. I'm going to bed.
Get ready for a Bible study I do on Skype at 8 o'clock.
Thank you
so much, Bill.
No, thank you. And I'll see you. Seeing you all in 2 weeks.
Yeah, in 2 weeks. You have a date?
Been a great conversation, and we'll meet here. Yahweh bless all of you, and I'll look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks.
Yeah, okay. Right.
Yahweh bless.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you. Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh.
Okay, Bill. Perfect.